Good morning. You are listening to WHFR Dearborn. This is the last live program you're going to hear for a couple of days here on WHFR, because in 2 hours, our winter season celebration will commence, and we've got a lot of exciting things in store for you. But right now, we're going to get right to the festivities for Radio Vault. This is Radio Vault, heard every Tuesday at 10 o'clock in the morning. Without further ado, we're going to dive right into, for those of you who missed our Christmas Carol presentation late last Sunday, we're going to give you a chance to hear it again. This is Lionel Barrymore. That's Drew's great uncle. And Orson Welles narrating the Campbell Playhouse presentation of A Christmas Carol from December 24, 1939. Well, we're going to take a moment out to see if we can correct that situation. In the meantime, let's see what's going on with Classical 24. Let's try this once again from December 24, 1939. Lionel Barrymore in A Christmas Carol. Let's see if this thing is happy now.
The makers of Campbell Soups present The Campbell Playhouse, Orson Welles, producer.
Good evening. This is Orson Welles. There are clearly a number of ways in which a Christmas carol could be introduced. Myself, I am most struck by the happy fortune that enables us on this Christmas Eve to present Mr. Lionel Barrymore, the best-loved actor of our time, in the world's best-loved Christmas story, A Christmas Carol. It is the American way, as we know, to establish traditions quickly where popular instinct and sentiment pronounce them sound. And so it is that today, actually only the fifth anniversary of Mr. Lionel Barrymore's first playing of the part of Ebenezer Scrooge for the Campbell Playhouse, there is, I think, in all America nothing more eagerly awaited, more firmly rooted in the hearts of the radio family that numbers millions, at this yearly performance of A Christmas Carol. A Christmas Carol, as Charles Dickens wrote it, has by common consent long been a classic. Mr. Lionel Barrymore's appearance in it is rapidly becoming one. And now, just before A Christmas Carol, Ernest Chappell has a special Christmas greeting from the makers of Campbell Soups. Mr. Chappell.
Thank you, Orson Welles. As the old year draws toward its close, we of Campbell's feel a bond of warmth and gratitude toward each of you, our friends. For you see, in homes everywhere throughout the land, Campbell's Soups have been welcome. Day by day and week by week, you have placed confidence in us and in the foods we make. And there isn't anything we appreciate more deeply than the fact that so many of you have elected to let Campbell's make your soups for you. And so when Christmas comes, we look about to find some way to show our appreciation, some Christmas present by which to say thank you. The gift we chose 5 Christmases ago and have chosen each year since has become a part of Christmas to many and many a family. It has become a Christmas custom to gather round the radio to hear and to enjoy A Christmas Carol. And since it is Christmas Eve, we hope, too, that the younger members of the family are permitted to stay up and listen before dreams and visit of Santa. We get a great deal of pleasure planning and preparing this Christmas gift, and now it's ready. Off come the wrappings, off come the tags that say, please do not open till Christmas. Out comes the card, to you from Campbell's. And here is the gift itself.
Dead to begin with. There's no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it. And Scrooge's name was good upon change for anything he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. Scrooge knew he was dead? Of course he did. Scrooge and Marley were partners for I don't know how many years. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone with Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. And once upon a time, of all the good days in the year, on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house, a grim, cheerless place if ever there was one. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open, that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, Bob Cratchit, who in a cold and dismal little cell beyond worked at his ledgers.
19, 20, 21, 22. Merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. 23, 26, 29. 5, carry 2. Christmas Day. 11, 13, 17, 7, carry 1.
Bob Cratchit!
Yes, Mr. Scrooge?
Stop that infernal caterwauling!
Yes, sir. 9, 15, 17, 29, carry 1.
Impudence. Singing their idiotic Christmas carols at my very door. Go somewhere else and bellow your blasted carols, or I'll give you in charge.
Sorry, Governor. It's an old custom at Christmas time, you know.
Yeah. And I don't want any of your old customs. Take your fellow fools and go away. Christmas. Blah.
Right, sir. Merry Christmas anyway, sir.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle. A Merry Christmas, Bob. A
Merry Christmas, Mr. Fred.
God save you, Uncle.
Ah, humbug.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Now, I'm sure you don't mean that.
I mean just that. Exactly that. Merry Christmas. What right have you to be mad? What reason have you? You're poor enough.
Well, what right have you to be dismal about Christmas, Uncle? You're rich enough.
Ah.
Now, Uncle, don't be cross.
Well, what else can I be when I live in such a world of fools? What's Christmas to you but a time for paying bills without money? Merry Christmas. A time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer. If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips would be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should.
Uncle?
Nephew? Keep your Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it, but you don't keep it, Uncle.
Well, let me leave it alone then. What do you want? A Christmas gift, I've no doubt.
I came to wish you a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
A Merry Christmas. Much good may Christmas do you. Much good it ever has done you.
There are many things from which I derived good by which I have not profited materially, I dare say, Uncle. Christmas among the rest. But I have always thought of Christmas time as a good time. A kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it.
God bless Christmas. Hurrah!
Let me hear another sound out of you there, Bob Cratchit, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation.
Yes.
As to you, nephew, I wonder you don't go into Parliament. You talk enough nonsense.
Don't be angry, Uncle. I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why can't we be friends?
Good afternoon.
Well, I'm sorry you feel that way. I've tried. A Merry Christmas to you, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year, too.
Ah, humbug.
And a Merry Christmas to you, Bob, and the missus, and to Tiny Tim.
Thank you, Mr. Fred. Same to you, sir. Good day, sir.
Good day, Bob.
Nonsense. Twaddle. Blummery. Talking of Christmas and not two sixpences to jingle together in his trousers pocket. You there, Bob Cratchit. Come here. What are you doing there?
I was only putting a bit more coal on the fire, Mr. Scrooge. Seeing it's so cold in there, sir.
Well, you put that coal back into the scuttle. A fire. A fire, indeed. I can tell you, if you use coal at that rate, you and I will soon be parting company, Bob Cratchit. You understand that? There's many a young fellow like your situation, you know.
Well, I'm sorry, sir. My fingers were getting a little stiff with the cold.
Then put on your mittens. There's someone at the door. See who it is.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
This is the firm of Scrooge and Marley.
Yes, sir.
I should like to see the head of the firm, if I may.
Oh, very good, sir.
What is it?
A gentleman to see you, Mr. Scrooge.
Huh?
Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Marley's been dead these 7 years tonight. I'm Scrooge.
Well, now, Mr. Scrooge, at this season of the year, it's only fitting that we who are more fortunate should raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. You may not believe it, sir, but many thousands are now in want of common necessities, and hundreds of thousands are in want of the simplest comfort, sir.
Are there no prisoners?
There are plenty of prisons, sir.
And the workhouses? They're still in operation, I trust.
I wish I could say they are not, but they are, sir.
The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor, then?
Both very busy, sir.
Oh, well, I'm very glad to hear that. I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful cause.
No, sir, all these institutions that you mention are flourishing. But it's nevertheless true that some additional provision for the poor and the destitute must be made. A few of us upon change are endeavoring to raise such a fund, you see. And what shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
Oh, I see. You wish to be anonymous, sir.
I wish to be let alone. I don't make merry myself at Christmas time, and I can't afford to keep a lot of idle people and make them merry. I help support the establishments that take care of the poor. They cost enough. Let those who are badly off go there.
Many can't go there, sir. And many would rather die.
Well, then, my advice to them is to do so and decrease the surplus population. Besides, I've only your word for it that all this is so.
The truth, Mr. Scrooge.
Well, so be it, then. It's not my business. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, sir.
I quite understand, Mr. Scrooge.
Cratchit, show this gentleman out.
Yes, sir. This way, please. Sir,
I couldn't help overhearing. I should like to contribute threepence.
Cratchit! Yes, sir.
It isn't much, but it's all I can afford. But there are others in worse situation than I.
You're a generous fellow. I wish I might say so of your employer.
Cratchit! Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Yes, sir.
Merry Christmas. Close the door.
Yes, sir. I have closed it, sir.
24, 31, 1 and carry 3. A new scarlet tippet for Tiny Tim. And a comb for Martha. 33, 3 and carry 3. Hair ribbon for Belinda. 4, 7, 12, 15.
I suppose you want the entire day tomorrow.
If it's quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient and it's not fair. But I suppose I can't do anything about it. If I was to stop half a crown of your wages, you'd think yourself very ill-used, I'll be bound.
Well, sir, I...
And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work?
It's only once a year, sir.
Once a year. Once a year, indeed. A fine excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose it's no good talking. You must have the whole day. Well, see that you're here all the earlier the next morning. You understand?
Oh, I will, sir. I will, sir, indeed. Good night, sir, and Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
The office was closed in a twinkling, and Bob Cratchit, with the long ends of his white comforter dangling below his waist, for he boasted no greatcoat, went down a slide on Cornhill 20 times in honor of its being Christmas Eve, and then ran home to Camden Town as hard as he could pelt to play with his family at Blind Man's Buff. Scrooge, on the other hand, took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern. Having read all the newspapers and spent the rest of the evening with his banker's book, went to his dismal house. Darkness is cheap and Scrooge likes it. The yard was so dark that even Scrooge, who knew its every stone, had to grope with his hands through the fog and the frost to find the door. Scrooge walked through his rooms to see that all was right. Sitting room, bedroom, lumber room, all as they should be. Nobody under the table, nobody under the sofa. Nobody under the bed, nobody in the closet. Closed the door. Locked himself in, double locked himself in. And took off his cravat, put on his dressing gown and slippers and his nightcap. And sat down before the fire to take his gruel.
Marley, I could have sworn I saw... Oh, humbug. Marley's been dead these 7 years. Humbug. It's all humbug. What I need is a good night. What's that? Someone's in the wine cellar. But the door's locked and double locked. Something's... It's coming. Something. It's coming closer. Outside my door. I won't believe it. It's humbug still.
Ebenezer Scrooge. Ebenezer Scrooge.
Oh, no. What do you want with me?
I want much of you, Ebenezer.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
Well, you're very particular for a ghost. All right. Who were you then?
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
Jacob Marley? But you're dead. You died 7 years ago.
7 years ago this very night.
You are a ghost then?
What's wrong, Ebenezer? Don't you believe in me?
I do not.
You doubt your senses, Ebenezer?
Yes, because a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheats. You can't be a ghost. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato. There may be more gravy than grave about you, whatever you are. Humbug, I tell you. Humbug. Excuse me, Jacob. Excuse me. I do believe in you. You are a ghost, Jacob.
Thank you.
But what? Why do you walk the earth, Jacob? Why do you come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide to witness what it cannot share but might have shared on earth and turn to happiness.
Oh, tell me, Jacob, what is that chain you wear around you?
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard by my own free will. Is its pattern strange to you, Ebenezer?
Cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, purses.
Yours was as heavy and as long as this 7 years ago. And you have labored on it since, Ebenezer.
Oh, Jacob, speak comfort to me.
Comfort I have none to give. I cannot rest. I cannot stay. I cannot linger. Weary journeys lie before me.
You travel fast?
Yes, Ebenezer. On the wings of the wind.
7 years dead and traveling all the time?
7 years, Ebenezer. 7 years of remorse. Ebenezer, do you know that no space of regret can make amends for one life's opportunities misused?
But you were always a good man of business, Jacob.
Business? Mankind was my business. Charity, mercy, benevolence, they were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business.
Oh. Jacob, don't take on so. Jacob.
Listen to me, Ebenezer.
I'll listen to you, Jacob. Go on, Jacob, speak to me. But don't be so flowery.
Ebenezer, I am here to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. Do you hear that, Ebenezer?
Yes, Jacob. You always were a good friend to me, Jacob. Thank you, Jacob. But go on. Go on. Go on. How shall I escape? Oh, I'm afraid, Jacob.
You will be haunted by three spirits.
Is that the only chance and hope, Jacob?
It is your only chance and hope.
Then I think I'd rather not.
Without their visit, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow, when the bell tolls one.
Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over, Jacob?
Ebenezer, look that for your own sake you remember what has passed between us. And remember, when the bell tolls one, look for the first spirit.
Marley. Jacob Marley.
Scrooge awoke. He was lying on his bed fully dressed. Suddenly the curtains of his bed were drawn aside. Scrooge found himself face to face with the unearthly visitor who drew them. As close to it as I am now to you. And I am standing in the spirit at your elbow. It was a strange figure. Like a child. Yet not so like a child as like an old man.
Scrooge. Who is that?
Ebenezer Scrooge, I have come for you.
You are the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold me?
I am that spirit.
What are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
No, your past.
But what do you want of me? What brings you here to haunt me?
Your welfare, Ebenezer Scrooge. Rise and walk with me.
Oh, no, you're not out of the window. I can't do that. I'll fall down.
I'm not a spirit. I'm mortal. I'll fall.
Bear but a touch of my hand upon your heart, and you shall be upheld in more than this. Come, follow me.
What's become of the city? And there's snow upon the ground. Where are we?
These are the shadows of the things that have been. You recognize this countryside?
Oh, I know every inch of it. Every rock, every tree.
And that bleak building over there?
That building. I was a boy there. Yes, I went to school in that horrible place.
Do you recollect that path?
I could walk it blindfold.
Strange you forgot it so many years. Come, let us go closer. Look through the window into that cold, barren room. What do you see, Ebenezer Scrooge?
I see a boy.
A solitary child, neglected by his family, alone.
Yes, yes, I see. I know that boy. Oh, I was so lonely. Poor boy.
Your lip is trembling, Scrooge. And what is that on your cheek?
It's nothing. Nothing. Nothing at all. I wish I... It's too late for that now.
What's the matter?
Nothing. Nothing. The waits came to my door singing Christmas carols last night. There was a boy like that among them. A poor, thin, pale boy in a ragged coat. I'd like to have given him something. That's all.
Is that all? Come, Ebenezer Scrooge. Let us see another Christmas. Do you know this place, Ebenezer Scrooge?
Know it? Know it? Why, this is the counting house where I was apprenticed.
Listen.
Why, it's my old master. Bless his heart, old Fezziwig. My master, alive again, and host at one of his Christmas parties. Listen to it.
Spread the needle and back to your places.
And there's Dick Wilkins. Poor Dick, dear, 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 yes. And look, there's Mrs. Fezziwig herself, looking younger than any of them. And the table's all loaded with roast and cider and mince pie and beer. Oh, what a jolly time we used to have.
That carefree young man with the light heart and the gay smile. Do you recognize him?
Yes, yes, yes. Merciful heaven. How happy I was then.
A small matter for old Fezziwig to make those silly folk so full of joy.
Small matter? Small indeed.
Isn't it? He has spent only a few pounds of your mortal money. Is that so much that he deserves praise?
Ah, it's not that. It's not that, Spirit. Old Fezziwig has the power to make us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or heavy. His power lies in words and looks, in things so tiny it's impossible to count them up. The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost her...
What is the matter?
Nothing. Nothing at all, Spirit.
Something, I think.
No, no,
speak.
No. Only, it's just that I should like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk, Bob Cratchit, just now, that's all.
My time grows short, and we have yet another journey to make.
Where now?
Come. This is our last visit to the past, Ebenezer. Here, in this little room, with a fair young girl by your side. Do you recognize yourself, Ebenezer?
Oh, no, 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 no. Spare me this.
You're older now, a man in the prime of life. Your face has begun to wear the signs of care
and avarice. Your eyes are greedy, the eager, restless eyes of a miser.
No, no, please.
She knows it, too, that girl by your side. There are tears in her eyes.
It matters little, Ebenezer, to you. Very little. I know that.
Belle, have I changed towards you?
When we were engaged, we were both poor.
Was it better then? Better to be poor?
Better at least to be happy. You're changed. You were another man then.
I was a boy. Do you blame me because I've grown wiser? Have I ever tried to break our engagement?
In words, no. Never.
In what then?
In a changed nature. In an altered spirit. In everything that made my love of any value in your sight. So I release you from your promise.
Belle.
Oh, at first it may cause you pain to lose me. A very brief pain. But soon it will be dim, like a half-remembered dream. An unprofitable dream. And you will be glad to be awake from such a dream. May you be happy in the life you have chosen, Ebenezer. For the love of him you once were.
Spirit, it's enough. Show me no more. Take me home.
These were shadows of the things that have been. That they are what they are. Do not blame me.
No more. No more.
One shadow more. Come. Do you see this man, Ebenezer Scrooge? This man might have been you. And the woman beside him, your wife. And that girl. That girl might have been your daughter, Ebenezer Scrooge. She might have called you father. She might have been a springtime in the haggard winter of your life.
Spirit, let me go. Show me no more.
Listen now, while they speak, Ebenezer.
Belle, I saw an old friend of yours today.
Who was it?
Yes.
How can I? I know. Mr. Scrooge.
Mr. Scrooge it was. I passed his office window. It wasn't shuttered. And there was a candle inside, so I couldn't help seeing him. His partner, Marley, lies at the point of death, I hear. And there Scrooge sat all alone. Quite alone in the world, I do believe.
Spirit, spirit, I can bear no more. Leave me. Haunt me no more. Take me back. Take me back.
Feast of Stephen, when the snow lay round about, deep and crisp and even, brightly shone the moon that night.
You are listening to the Campbell Playhouse, bringing you tonight the fifth annual presentation of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, produced by Orson Welles and starring Lionel Barrymore as Scrooge. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Deep and crisp and even, brightly shone the moon that night, though the frost was cruel, when a poor man came in sight, gathering winter fuel.
And now back to the Campbell Playhouse and the fifth annual presentation of A Christmas Carol, a Christmas present from the makers of Campbell Soups.
Stroke of one, Scrooge awakened suddenly and sat him bolt upright in his own bed. He remembered the words of Marley's ghost and wondered from which direction the second specter would appear. At that moment, nothing between a baby and a rhinoceros would have astonished him very much. Now being prepared for almost anything, he was not by any means prepared for nothing. And consequently, when no shape appeared, he was taken with a violent fit of trembling. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, quarter of an hour went by, yet nothing came. Then as he sat in his bed, he became aware gradually of a great blaze of ruddy light that seemed to shine upon him from the adjoining room. He got up softly and shuffled in his slippers to the door. It was his own sitting room, there was no doubt about that. But it had undergone a surprising transformation. The walls and ceiling were so hung with living green that it looked a perfect grove. And there sat a jolly giant, glorious to see, who bore a glowing torch in shape not unlike Plenty's horn, and held it up, high up, to shed its light on Scrooge as he came peeping round the corner.
Come in, Ebenezer Scrooge, and know me better, man. I am the ghost of Christmas present.
Spirit, take me where you will. Last time I went against my will and learned a lesson which is working now. If you have anything to teach me, let me profit by it.
Touch my robe, Ebenezer Scrooge. Touch my robe.
Where have you brought me, Spirit?
To an humble dwelling in an humble street.
It's miserable enough.
Yet there is happiness there.
Who are these people? Who's that woman? And the children?
These are the family of your clerk, Bob Cratchit. See his wife, dressed in a twice-turned gown, but brave in ribbons, laying the table for their Christmas dinner. And there, assisting her, is her daughter, Belinda. And the young man with the fork in the stuffing, that's Master Peter Cratchit. And the two little Cratchits. Listen, Scrooge. And watch.
Here's Martha, Mother.
Now sit you down before the fire, Martha, and have a warm, Lord bless you.
Where's Father?
He's been to church with Tiny Tim. They'll be along directly.
How is Tiny Tim, Mother? Any better at all?
Sometimes I think he is. And sometimes I think, oh, dear God, if anything should happen to Tiny Tim.
Oh, Mother, you mustn't even think of such a thing.
Oh, where's Father?
Come in. Merry Christmas, everybody. Oh, Martha, welcome, my dear.
Oh, Merry Christmas, Father. Jim.
Merry Christmas, Martha.
Oh, Jim, you darling. Oh, Father, I'm so glad to be home.
And we're glad to have you, Martha.
And how did little Tim behave in church, Bob?
As good as gold and better.
I like church, Mother. Oh, they sang the nicest songs. I hope people saw me there.
Saw you there? And why, Tim?
Well, don't you see? Because I'm lame. And if they saw my crutch, it might be pleasant for them to remember on Christmas who it was made lame beggars walk and blind men see.
Bless you, my son.
Are we ready to eat, Mother?
Oh, come on, yes, children, we're all ready. Come, take your places and wait your turn. There's plenty of stuffing and dressing and plum pudding for all of you. Martha, take care of Tiny Tim and see that he eats plenty.
Yes,
he must
Mother.
Get strong and well. Now sit down, everyone.
Yes, come on, Tiny Tim.
And now, my dears,
I see a vacant seat in the four chimney corner. And a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved.
No, kind spirit. Say he'll be spared. Say he'll live.
If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, Ebenezer, the child will die.
And to praise thy name. Amen.
Amen.
And now, my dears, with such a dinner, a toast, a Merry Christmas to us all, and God bless us.
God bless us, everyone.
And now to Mr. Scrooge. I'll give you a toast to Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast.
Oh, the founder of the feast, indeed, who pays you all of 15 shillings a week. I wish I had him here. I'd give him a piece of my mind to feast on, and I hope he'd have good appetite for it.
My dear, the children, Christmas Day.
It should be Christmas Day, I'm sure, on which one drinks the health of such an odious, stingy, unfeeling man as Mr. Scrooge. You know he is, Bob. Nobody knows it better than you, poor fellow.
My dear Christmas Day.
I'll drink his health for your sake and the day's, not for his. Long life to him. A Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. He'll be very merry and very happy, I have no doubt.
And I say God bless him too, Mother, and everyone.
Yes,
to Mr. Scrooge.
Very well.
There was nothing of high mark in all this. They were not a handsome family, these Cratchits. They were not well dressed. Their shoes were far from being waterproof. Their clothes were scanty and had known, very likely, the insides of a pawnbroker's. But they were happy, grateful, pleased with one another and contented with the time. And when at last they faded, Scrooge had his eye upon them. And especially on Tiny Tim, until the last. Many calls Scrooge made that night with a ghost of Christmas present. Down among the miners they went who labor in the bowels of the earth. And out to sea among the sailors at their watch. Dark, ghostly figures in their several stations. Much they saw and far they went. And many places they visited. But always with a happy end. The spirits stood beside sick beds and they were cheerful. On foreign lands and they were close at home. By poverty and it was rich. In almshouse, hospital and jail. Where vain man in his little brief authority had not made fast the door and barred the spirit out, the spirit left his blessing. It was a long night. It was only a night. And it was strange, too, that while Scrooge remained unaltered in his outward form, the ghost grew older. Clearly older.
My life upon this globe is very brief, Ebenezer. It ends tonight.
Tonight?
Tonight at midnight. Hark. The hour is come.
Oh, not yet. Not yet. No. There are still more things I wish to learn.
These you will learn from still another spirit. Still another spirit, Ebenezer.
Scrooge looked about him for the ghost. It had vanished. But he found himself once more in his bed, in his dressing gown, in his nightcap. He'd heard the clock strike. And then he remembered the prediction of old Jacob Marley, and lifting up his eyes, beheld the third spirit. A solemn phantom. Shrouded in black, draped and hooded, coming towards him slowly and silently, like a mist along the ground.
I know you. You are the ghost of Christmas yet to come. You'll show me the shadows of things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Answer me, spirit, ghost of the future. Oh, I fear you more than any specter I've seen. Yet, as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, lead on. Lead on! The night is waning fast. Time is precious. Spirit, why have you brought me here again? Here to Bob Cratchit's home? Hey, why is it so quiet, so very quiet here?
Mother, please.
Oh, my son, my little son. Tell me, Tim, I loved him so.
Mother, dear, you mustn't. It's almost time for Father to be home. Don't let him see you crying.
Yes. Yes, Martha. He's late tonight. He walks slower than he used to. Yet I've known him to walk very fast indeed with Tiny Tim on his shoulder.
So have I, Mother. But he was light to carry.
And his father loved him so that it was no trouble. No trouble at all. Bob.
Good evening, my dear.
You're late, Bob.
I'm sorry, my dear. I went to the churchyard today. I wish you could have gone with me. It would have done your heart good to see how sweet and green a place it is. You'll see it often. I promised him. I promised Tiny Tim we'd walk there on Sunday.
Oh, Father, dear. It's God's will, Bob.
I'm trying to understand it, my dear. My son. My little son, Tiny Tim. And I loved him so.
Oh, that's cruel. Cruel. Spirit, can't you give me one ray of hope that I may change all that? That Tiny Tim may live? Shadows of things that will be, or are they the shadows of things that may be only? Will you not speak to me, Spirit? What is that grave to which you point? Now I see. There's writing on that stone. The name on the gravestone is Ebenezer Scrooge. Ebenezer Scrooge. Show me this, if I'm past all hope. Tell me that I may change these dreadful shadows that have come, that you've shown me, by an altered life. I'll honor Christmas in my heart, and I'll try and keep it all the year. I'll live in the past, the present, and the future. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Tell me, do, Spirit. Please tell me that I can sponge away the writing on that stone, Spirit. I beg of you, Spirit. Spirit. Spirit, I promise on my knees. I promise. Bedpost. I'm home. In my own bed. In my own room. I'm the sun. The sunshine. It's clear. It's bright. No fog. Oh, what a beautiful day. Glorious. Glorious. Boy. Oh, boy.
Yes, sir.
What's today?
What's that, sir?
What day is it, my fine fella?
Today? Why, it's Christmas Day.
Christmas Day! Ha ha! I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. All in one night. Heaven be praised.
How's that, sir?
Listen, my lad. Do you know where the poulter is in the next street?
I should say I do.
An intelligent boy. A remarkable boy. Tell me, do you know if they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging in the window?
The one as big as me?
What a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Yes, my buck?
It's hanging there now, sir.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now go around, will you? And tell him to send it to Bob Cratchit and his family on Broad Street. And mind you, they're not to know who paid for it. Now hurry along, my lad. And here's half a crown for your trouble.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And a Merry Christmas.
And a Merry Christmas to you, too, my boy. Oh, I don't know what to do. I'm as light as a feather, as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. A Merry Christmas. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all the world.
Next morning, Scrooge was early at his office. He went early for a reason. If he could only be there first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late. That was the thing he'd set his heart upon. And he did it. Yes, he did. The clock had struck 9. No Bob. 9:15. No Bob. Scrooge sat with his door wide open that he might see him come in. And at last he came. His hat was off before he opened the door. His comforter, too. He was on his stool in a jiffy, driving away with his pen, as if he were trying to overtake 9 o'clock.
8 and 17 are 15. Carry the 1, 24. Carry the 2, 31. Carry the 4. 8 and 6 are 14. Carry the 8.
Hello, you, Cratchit.
Yes, sir.
Step this way, Cratchit, if you please. Cratchit, what do you mean by coming in at this time of day?
Oh, I'm very sorry, sir. I'm behind my time.
You are? You are? Yes, I think you are.
Oh, it's only once a year, Mr. Scrooge. It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir.
I'll tell you what, my friend. I'll not stand this sort of thing any longer. And therefore, Bob Cratchit, I'm about to raise your salary.
Mr. Scrooge, are you quite yourself, sir?
No. No, thank heaven I am not quite myself. Merry Christmas, Bob. Merry Christmas, my good fella. A merrier Christmas than I've given you in many a year. I'll raise your salary and we'll see what we can do for Tiny Tim and the rest of your family. We'll discuss it this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop. Bob, make up the fire. Pick it up and buy another coal scuttle before you dart another eye.
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all, and infinitely more. To Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh and little heeded them. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further intercourse with spirits, but lived upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards, and it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us. All of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.
Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare his room.
You have just heard our annual presentation of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, starring Lionel Barrymore, brought to you by the makers of Campbell's Soups. And now here is Orson Welles.
At this point in the program, ladies and gentlemen, it is my custom, as you know, to present to you with a few words of introduction our guest of the evening. With your consent, I shall dispense with this tonight to introduce tonight's guest to the Campbell Playhouse audience or to any other American audience is an extravagant and superfluous procedure. For if ever an actor has won for himself a lasting place in the hearts of his fellow countrymen through years of unsparing and inspiring service, that actor is Lionel Barrymore. Mr. Lionel Barrymore.
Thank you, Orson Welles. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the fourth year I've had the pleasure of appearing in the Christmas Carol here on the Campbell Playhouse. And I assure you all, it's a pleasure that never tires. As long as I can remember, this has been one of my favorite stories. When we were children, it was read to us regularly at this time of year, as it is to millions of
children right now. And like many of them, I'm sure, the three of us, Ethel, Jack, and I, with the aid of a sheet and some old ironware, made a play of it. As I remember, we had three Scrooges in that production.
Mr. Barrymore, who played Tiny Tim?
I think we had three Tiny Tims, too. But seriously, I can think of no part that I've enjoyed playing again and again as much as I have the part of that squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner, Ebenezer Scrooge. And I can think of no happier or more suitable choice for the makers of Campbell's Soups to offer the people of America as their Christmas present each year than Charles Dickens' well-beloved story, Christmas Carol. Good night, Orson. Good night, everybody. And a merry, merry Christmas to you all.
Good night, Mr. Barrymore. Merry Christmas to you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, for next Sunday night, we're happy to announce our version of a great and truly American story by a great American novelist, Come and Get It by Edna Ferber. Against a background of the mighty forests of Miss Ferber's own Wisconsin, it tells a stirring tale of the men and women who live and die in the woods in order that lumber may come down the rivers every spring into the cities of the modern world. Like so many of Miss Ferber's epic romances of American life, it was made from a best-selling novel into a highly successful motion picture. Now we bring it to you on the air. Story of a man and his son and the girl they both loved, Lotta. Played for us by one of the loveliest and most accomplished of Hollywood's younger dramatic actresses, Miss Frances D. And so until next week, until Come and Get It with Frances D., my sponsors, the makers of Campbell Soups, and all of us on the Campbell Playhouse remain, as always, obediently yours. But just a minute, Benny, ladies and gentlemen, it's the night before Christmas. And all through the Campbell Playhouse, not a creature is stirring that doesn't join Lionel Barrymore in wishing you a merry, merry Christmas. This goes for all of us, from my sponsor, from myself, from all of us, from Don McBain, who runs the machinery in the control room, to Miss Helgren, who types the Campbell Playhouse scripts. A merry Christmas from Benny Herman and his band of merry melodians. Merry Christmas. Get the idea. From Max Sayers, choruses. From Harry Esman and his crew of sound effect technicians. Thank you. And from Orson Welles and his considerable aggregation of dramatic talent, which includes, among others, Mr. Frank Reddick, Miss Georgia Backus, Miss B. Benaderet, Mr. Ray Collins, Mr. Everett Sloan, Mr. George Kalouris, Edgar Berry, Erskine Sanford, Tommy Lane, William Allen, Betty Lou Walters, Eric Burtis, and, of course, myself and George Spelvin. A merry Christmas. How about it, ladies and gentlemen?
A merry Christmas.
And finally, as Tiny Tim says,
God bless us, everyone.
The makers of Campbell's Soups join Orson Welles in inviting you to be with us in the Campbell Playhouse again next Sunday evening when we bring you Edna Ferber's Come and Get It with Miss Frances D. as our guest. Meanwhile, if you have enjoyed our fifth annual presentation of A Christmas Carol, won't you tell your grocer so this week when you order Campbell's Soups? This is Ernest Chappell saying thank you and a Merry Christmas to you all. The Columbia Broadcasting System.
And I think that's my cue. There you have Campbell Playhouse from December 24, 1939. This is Radio Vault, and we've got Life of Riley from December 12, 1947 coming up.
Hi, I'm Bad Anderson, WHSY's Blues with the Feeling. Here's wishing you a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and a prosperous New Year. Keep it locked to 89.3 FM.
What's happening, listeners of WHFR? Sean Daniels from Beats to the Rhymes. Just want to say have a safe and happy holiday, and listen to WHFR more in the New Year.
May your holidays be happy, and your families be blessed.
season's greetings from the diva of lyrical infusion.
WHFR Dearborn.
The Life of Riley. The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. Well, Christmas will be here in a few days, and Chester A. Riley is in a jovial pre-holiday mood. As we look in on him, he's gleefully outlining his plans for the big day to Babs and Junior.
Yes, sir, kids, it'll be a great day. And afterwards, we'll eat a big Christmas dinner, and then we'll go visiting. We'll visit all our friends who gave us presents and thank them, and then we'll visit those who didn't give us presents and give them their last chance to come through. Oh, there's nothing like Christmas, eh, kids?
Aw, Pop, do we have to go through the same old routine every year?
And that... Well, just what do you mean by that remark?
Well, nothing, only... Well, can't we go away somewhere over Christmas?
Go away? Leave our home on Christmas?
Why not, Daddy? We could go to Lake Arrowhead. They're skiing and...
I'm shocked. I'm speechless.
Well, what's the matter now, dear?
Hey, do you know what they're saying, those children of yours?
Oh, now they're my children.
They want to go away for Christmas. Leave our home. That's the thanks I get for giving birth to them.
Oh, now they're your children. Well, they're just talking.
Jeepers, Daddy, you'd think we'd said something horrible.
Yeah, some gratitude. I work like a dog, day in, day out, slaving to provide a nice home for you kids. The least you could do for me is to spend Christmas in here, in the home I bought for you.
Pop, you don't own this house.
Well, all right, don't do it for me. Do it for the Bank of America.
Oh, now, Riley, they didn't mean any harm.
Okay, but believe me, it hurts to think my own kids don't appreciate their home.
But we do, Daddy, honestly.
The home that I created with working and planning. Why, there's part of me in every room.
You're so right, dear. I wish you wouldn't leave your clothes all over the house.
Well, I'm sorry. Junior will pick them up later. You kids don't know how lucky you are. You don't know what it feels like not to have a roof over your head. But your mother and me know, don't we, Peg?
Do we? I'll never forget our first Christmas after we were married.
No, let me tell them. You see, I didn't have a job, so I had to swallow my pride and move in with my outlaws.
Pop, you mean in-laws.
To me, they'll always be outlaws.
Now, Ryan.
Now, let me tell it my way. Well, there we were, living on charity.
Why, Riley!
Well, that's what your father said it was. Day in and day out, your mother's father would nag at me. Nag, nag, nag. Why don't you get a job? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? I remember one night, just before Christmas...
Supper ready, Peggy?
Well, yes, Papa, but Chester isn't home yet.
I don't see why I have to go hungry just because that good-for-nothing husband of yours...
Oh, Papa, please don't start that again.
When is that Chisler going to get a job?
Well, give him a chance. He's looking for one. You're not being fair to Chester.
Fair? He doesn't want to work. Yesterday, I talked to Harry Arkin and offering him a job at Coney Island. Why did he turn it down?
Well, I made him. I won't have people throwing baseballs at my husband's head.
Well, I'm sure the baseballs don't like it either.
Hello, Peggy.
Oh, hello, Chester.
Hello, Mr. Barker, sir. I'm sorry I was late.
What's the matter, Chester?
I got an awful headache.
Oh, Chester, you took that job at Coney Island.
No. I've just been walking so much.
Oh, you poor dear. Shall I get you an aspirin?
Yeah. Put it on a piece of bread. I'm hungry, too.
Well, we'll eat in just a minute. Any luck today, Chester?
No, nothing. But maybe there'll be something in the want ads tonight. I'll just take a look and... May I look at your paper, Mr. Barker? Thank you. Mr. Barker, I brought you something.
What, Chester?
It's out in the hall. Yeah. You see?
That's a big package.
Yeah. I heard you say you wanted a Christmas wreath for the front door, so I got you one. Here.
Oh, Chester, it's simply beautiful. Take it, Papa.
It's very,
You're welcome.
You see, Papa, Chester does think of you.
Nice wreath. Big. I don't think I've ever seen a wreath as big as this. Why, you...
Well, Papa, what's wrong?
Look what it says on the back of this wreath. Gone, but not forgotten.
Chester, why did you buy a wreath like that?
Oh, I didn't buy it. I got it free from Digger O'Dell, the undertaker.
Why, you good-for-nothing, giving me a wreath from a funeral parlor.
But it's not the wreath that counts. It's the thought behind it.
You're nothing but a lazy, shiftless loafer.
Oh, Papa, please. Oh, don't mind Papa Chester. He says terrible things, but he really likes you underneath.
Well, that goes for me, too. I like your father underneath. That's why I gave him a wreath.
Stop your soft soap. If you had any character, you wouldn't be scrounging here on charity. You'd go out and make a living for your wife.
I'm not going to stand here and be insulted. I'm leaving.
Go ahead, leave.
Let me finish. I'm leaving as soon as I find a job.
Alibis. Always alibis. You're lazy, shiftless, and you're a born sponger.
One of these days, your father's going to say something that I resent. You know, I'm very sensitive. Peggy, you're crying.
Oh, Chester, I just can't stand the way you and Papa are always fighting.
Well, don't worry, Peggy. It won't be forever. I promise this Christmas we'll be in our own apartment. I swear it.
Oh, Chester, be practical. Christmas is the day after tomorrow. You haven't even got a job.
Well, I'll get one. Have a little confidence in me. Gee, you'd think a guy's own wife would have a little confidence in him.
Oh, but I do have confidence in you. I know you'll make good. You're sweet and ambitious and honest, and you have brains.
Well, you don't have to go that far. I just have confidence.
Oh, my goodness. We have to make another payment on our furniture tonight.
Yeah, that's right. Only I didn't even get any odd jobs today, so I'm broke. Could you please lend me the dollar for the payment tonight, Peg?
Oh, certainly, dear. Here, take $2.
Oh, no. No, no. You know my rule. I never borrow more than $1 from you, and I always pay it right back with the next dollar I make.
All right. Here's $1.
Thanks. That makes 88 bucks I owe you. Well, here's this week's dollar, Mr. Strauss.
Thank you. And here's your receipt, Mr. Riley.
Is our furniture still in the showroom?
Yeah, still there. But, Mr. Riley, you've been looking at it for 88 weeks. Why don't you have it delivered to your home? It's yours, you know.
Well, yes, we know, Mr. Strauss.
Oh, we'll have you deliver it before Christmas, for sure.
Fine.
Come on, Peggy, let's go see our furniture, huh?
Oh, it's so embarrassing, Chester, keeping our furniture here this long.
Well, don't worry, Dumpler. We'll take it the minute we get our apartment, as soon as I get a job, as soon as the Depression's over.
There it is, Chester.
Oh, it's beautiful. Hey, look at that. What nerve.
What is it?
That guy there in pajamas lying in our bed. Hey, get out of there, you!
Oh, Chester, that's a dummy in our bed.
Oh, yeah. Lucky dummy. Gee, I can just see myself there in his place.
Oh, Chester, you've just got to get a job.
Well, don't worry, Dumplin', I will. I'm going to go buy tomorrow morning's paper right now and follow up every ad in it.
That's the way to talk, darling.
Yes, sir. My head's made up. From this minute on, I'm going to be independent and not depend on nobody for nothing. Peg, lend me 2 cents for a paper. I just got to get a job. Oh, here we are. Bookkeeper. Cook. I can't cook. Model wanted. Must have beautiful figure, size 36 hips. Parisian corset company. Just my luck. I got 38 hips. Oh, this is help. Female. Oh, here we are. Male. Barber. Chauffeur. Business executive will pay very high salary to expert driver. Apply Hotel Smedley, room 203, high salary. Oh, boy, that's for me.
Hello? Yes, this is room 203. Okay, come on up. That was some cluck who fell for our ad. Put your coat on, Spider. You don't want him to see your holster.
I don't like it, Duke. I don't see how it can work.
Look, I'll explain it to you for the last time. How many bank jobs did we pull last year?
Three, but...
And what happens? Three times we got a monkey behind a wheel who gets nervous and blows before we're ready for the getaway.
Well, how do we know the monkey we get through this side won't get nervous?
Because when he's sitting outside the Third National Bank, he won't know it's a stick-up. He'll think we're in there transacting some business.
I don't like it. I was brought up like this here. When you rob a bank, do it legitimate.
We'll do it my way, Spider.
Okay, Duke. Only you think we can find a Jake dumb enough for this here setup?
We'll soon find out. Come in.
Good evening, Mr. And Mr.
Come in.
Oh, thanks. Is the job still open?
Yes, it's still open. Sit down, Mr.
Riley. Chester Riley.
Are you a good driver, Riley?
Oh, yeah, you bet. Just a man you'll need. I never go more than 20 miles an hour.
Hmm. Well, on this job, you might have to. You see, sometimes we have to go places in a hurry for business reasons.
Oh, well, I can speed, too. What business are you in, kind sir, if I might be so crude?
Finance, banking, you might say.
Oh, banking! I know all about debentures and the fiscal fiduciary.
The what?
Fiscal fiduciary?
I like the way this man talks.
Yeah, just the type we've been hoping for.
Riley, the job's yours.
Oh, thanks.
Be here tomorrow, too, Riley. I'll have the car here, and you'll drive me to the bank just before it closes.
Yes, sir. I'll be... And the salary?
$100 a week.
Oh, bless you.
Okay, Riley, stop kissing my hand.
And this is the living room. Well, Peg, how do you like it?
Oh, Chester, it's a beautiful apartment. Isn't it lovely, Papa? Oh, I can hardly believe it. Everything happened so fast. Yesterday we didn't have a thing, and now you got a wonderful job.
Yeah, and what a job. 100 smackers a week.
And we got this gorgeous apartment, and we'll have our furniture this afternoon.
Yeah.
Well, Papa, you ought to apologize for all those mean things you said to Chester.
I accept your apology.
Now, Papa, you apologize right.
Well, I'm sorry. I guess I was wrong about you. Looks like you're going to make good after all, son.
Son? Peg, did you hear? He called me son. Oh, Papa!
Well, I've got to get down to my office now. You too, I suppose, huh, Chester?
Oh, no, not me. Not until 2 this afternoon. Banker's hours, you know.
Well, I'd better run along.
Goodbye, Papa.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, here's your paper, son.
Thanks, Papa, darling.
Oh, Chester, that's not our paper.
Well, yes, it is. I told the boy to start delivering. I want to get domesticated fast.
Oh, it'll be wonderful from now on.
Yeah. Every night I'll come home from work and I'll flop down on my lounge chair by the fireplace here. But like this.
Oh, Chester, that's only an orange crate.
I know, but let's pretend. And then you'll put the footstool under my feet. Well, go on, do it.
But there's no footstool.
Oh, let's pretend.
Oh, Chester.
And then you'll sit on my lap and tell me what you did all day. Come on, sit on my lap.
Oh, silly. It's 9 o'clock in the morning.
I know, but let's pretend.
Well, I don't mind.
Good. And then you read the paper to me. Go on, here.
All right. Let's see. Listen to this.
Huh?
Police nab notorious bandits in hotel room.
Oh, it's nice here by the fire.
Last night, police arrested Duke Wagley and Spider Giffen, notorious bank robbers wanted in 10 states.
Well, I got no sympathy with crooks. Any guy wants money, let him get an honest job like I did. Gee, I got a sweet boss.
The pair were nabbed in their hideout, room 203, Hotel Smedley.
Hey, that's a coincidence. My boss lives in the same hotel.
Really?
Yeah, not only that, but in the very same... Peg,
Would you mind very much if we were no better off than we were last night?
Oh, but we are better off.
Let's pretend.
Now be quiet and let me finish reading this.
No, don't read anymore. Read something else.
Well, all right. What?
Read the want ads. Oh, Maggie!
And now back to the life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. Riley is telling his children the story of how he and Mrs. Riley spent the first Christmas of their married life years ago.
Well, there I was, kids, with this beautiful apartment, and the man who was going to give me the money to pay the rent was on his way to Sing Sing.
Gee, that was a tough break, Pop.
What did you do, Daddy?
Well, what could I do? I gave up the apartment and called up the store not to deliver our furniture. So there it was, still in the showroom.
And then you went back to live with Grandpa?
No. After all, I had my pride. I got another apartment. A little less expensive and a little higher up. But it was home. I remember the first time I brought your mother to see it.
Chester, where is this apartment?
Well, only one more flight, Dumplin'.
But we walked 8 flights already.
Yeah, but we got the penthouse.
It's so high up. Suppose we have... Well, I mean, 9 flights are awful hard on a baby.
Yes, lucky we ain't babies. Oh, here we are. I'll get the key.
Oh, the door's open.
Oh, yeah. Why, that's the hinges. They're a little loose, but the landlord's going to put in a new door. Well, let's go in. I'd carry you across the threshold, but I ain't got the strength after them stairs. Watch out, there's a loose floorboard around here somewhere.
Well, put on the lights.
Well, there's no lights yet, but the landlord's going to connect them.
Oh!
Good for you, Peggy. You found a loose floorboard. Did you hurt yourself, darling?
Well, no, it's all right.
Oh, good. Now, let's see what this door's for.
Oh, well, at least there's a big closet.
That's the bedroom.
Oh.
You don't like it, do you?
Well, I guess it'll be all right, but won't it be a little cold here?
Oh, that's no problem. We'll be as warm as toast in here as soon as the landlord puts in a heater.
Well, when's the landlord going to do all this?
Well, I don't know. He went to Florida for the winter.
Oh, Chester.
Look at that view we get through the skylight. The whole sky. Look, it's snowing. Oh, this is going to be a real Christmas, Dumplin'. It wouldn't be Christmas without snow.
But the snow isn't supposed to fall inside the house. Oh, Chester, let's go back to Papa.
But, Peg, I thought you wanted a home of your... You're right. This is no place for you. We'll go back.
So this is where you are.
Papa!
Oh, you shouldn't have come. We're not ready for company yet, Pop.
Don't pop me, you big baboon. Have you lost your mind?
Watch out for that loose...
You expect my daughter to live in a hovel like this?
Watch out for that
you
loose...
You have the nerve to invite the family here for Christmas? Oh, my knee. Well, don't stand there, you idiot. Say something.
Watch out for that loose floorboard.
Peggy, you're coming home with me.
He's right. Let's go, Peg.
Not you. Just Peggy. Come on.
I'm not going, Papa.
Peggy?
No, go with him, Peg. He's right.
I'm staying with my husband.
Your husband. Your husband is a no-good loafer.
He's right, Peggy. Your husband's a no-good loafer. And I'm a witness. Go with him, Peggy.
No. I'm staying with you, Chester.
All right. Have it your way. But remember, you made your own bed. Now lie in it. Goodbye.
Huh. It shows you how smart he is. We haven't even got a bed.
Oh, Chester.
Peggy, maybe you should have gone with him.
Oh, no, I don't mind being here with you.
Well, I don't mind either with you.
I like it here.
I like it, too.
We'll be happy.
Well, sure, we'll be happy. But don't cry, Peggy. If there's one thing I can't stand, it's a woman who cries. Gee, the snow is deep. Oh, I just got to get a job and a decent place to live. We can't stay where we are. I wouldn't be found dead in a place like that.
What kind of place would you like?
Who's that?
It is I, Digby Odell, Flatbush friendly undertaker. Merry Christmas, Riley. And I'd like to wish you a happy new year. Happy new year.
Well, what's happy about it?
Oh, look on the bright side, as I always do. As I said in a Yuletide poem I once wrote, and I quote, "'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through Odell's house, not a creature was stirring."
Well, never mind the rest, Digger. Gee, things are bad. No money around. Today, the butcher said his customers walk in, look around, and walk out again.
I'm lucky. My customers never walk out. Knock wood.
If I could only get a job and a little place to live. We got our own furniture, but it's still in the showroom at Strauss's department store.
Oh, I know the store well. Yesterday, some ruffian stole a sign from there and hung it on the door of my business establishment. No, I was incensed.
Why? What did the sign say?
This week, all our boxes will be wrapped as Christmas gifts.
Digger, I'm licked. What's the use of going on?
Oh, never lose hope. As we often say in our profession, there's life in the old boy yet.
Oh, gee, Digger, if you could only think of something.
Eureka, I have it. Your problem is solved.
Digger, you mean, but where, how, what?
Hurry, man, we've no time to lose.
Oh, Digger, you saved my life.
I did? Well, it's Christmas. Come along. We'd better be shoveling off. Jingle bells, jingle bells.
Well, Peg, in another few minutes, it'll be midnight and Christmas. Are you happy?
Oh, yes, Chester.
Okay, come on, sit down here beside me on the sofa.
On our sofa?
Yeah, on our sofa. Every horsehair belongs to us. Gee, it's like a miracle, thanks to Digger Odell. If he hadn't have gotten me that swell job...
Just think, an hour ago, we were freezing in that awful apartment. And look where we are now. It's like a fairy tale.
Yeah, and good old Digger is my fairy godmother. You know, like in Cinderella. It's just as if he touched my head with his magic wand and turned it into a pumpkin.
Oh, I'm glad you're happy, dear.
Well, why shouldn't I be? I made good my promise, didn't I? I said we'd spend this Christmas alone. And here we are.
Yes, without Papa.
Yeah, that's the best part. Well, it's late. Time for sleepy bye.
Oh, I'm so tired. Oh. Well, your nightshirt's over there.
Oh, I can't go to sleep now. I'll lose my job.
Oh, yes. I forgot you're the night watchman in this department store.
Yeah. I'll wake you at 8. We gotta be out of this showroom by 9. Merry Christmas, Dumplin'.
Merry Christmas, sweetheart.
Well, that's the story, Junior. Your mother and me spent our first Christmas Eve all alone in a department store.
Gosh. Well, you weren't in the window, were you?
Oh, Junior, don't be a goof.
Nah, and we were glad to be there. We thought we were lucky.
You certainly had a tough time.
Well, of course, we only stayed there one night, but the next day we got a little apartment.
Yes, and I hope you kids will learn a lesson from this story.
Oh, we did, Daddy.
Well, sure, Pop. It's kind of crazy to want to go away when we've got a swell home.
I guess we owe you an apology.
And that goes for me, too, Pop.
Oh, Riley. You sounded just like my father.
I did? Well, then I take it back. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Procter & Gamble invites you to join us again next week to hear The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. The script is by Alan Lipscott and Reuben Schiff. Mrs. Riley is Paula Winslow. Digger Odell is John Brown. The Life of Riley is produced and directed by Irving Brecker. Listen again next week when Prell brings you The Life of Riley. Merry Christmas and good night.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
And you are listening to Radio Vault Christmas Eve edition. And we have got Fibber McGee and Molly coming up from December 10 of 1940.
Hi, this is David Twitchell, host of We Are Not Alone, which airs the first Monday of each month here on WHFR. And I'd like to wish all our loyal listeners, anyone within the sound of my voice, a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and the best of the new year.
Hi, this is Pat Frisco from the Spirits Rejoice and Rollin' and Tumblin' radio programs, wishing everyone the very best of the holiday season.
Yo, guys and dolls, this is Daddy G, host of The Malt Shop, which is on every Monday from 2 to 4. Listen in. And I want to wish all of you a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and Happy New Year. Ha! Love yous.
I take care of my bone health, so I remain strong and active as I age. You can too. It is never too early or too late to start taking care of your bones. Bones provide support to keep you moving. Maintain bone strength at every age by getting calcium and vitamin D in your diet and exercising regularly. Get on your own path to good bone health. For bone health tips, visit pathtogoodbonehealth.org.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. The show opens with Crazy Rhythm. Christmas packages early is a great idea for two reasons. One, it gets them off your mind. And two, the recipient has time to look his gift over and change yours for something cheaper. So here at 79 Wistful Vista, about to depart for the post office with arms full of packages, we find Fibber McGee and Molly.
Dearie, let's be sure we got everything. Okay. Here's the one for Aunt Bess.
Yeah.
One for Uncle Dennis. We don't have to mail that. He'll be with us over Christmas.
He's going to be with us here for Christmas?
Sure.
Oh, happy Yuletide.
McGee, don't be like that. Where's your Christmas spirit?
I had it up on my closet shelf, and Uncle Dennis found it, and
he... McGee! That's enough of that.
Yeah. Would have been enough for me, but that guy is so thirsty.
Please! Please, let's not discuss Uncle Dennis anymore.
Okay. Hey, why don't we go down to the post office after supper instead of now? Might be less of a crowd down there.
I don't know if they're open that late.
Oh, I'll call. See, hand me that phone. Thanks. Hello, operator. Give me the post office. Oh, is that you, Mert? How's everything, Mert? Yes, eh? What say, Mert? Your 17-year-old sister. Had her face lifted.
Oh, heavenly days. What'd she do that for?
She couldn't help it. She bought a false face for a New Year's party and somebody swiped it. What say, Mert? Yeah. Yes, it laid there. What say? Oh, the post office don't answer, eh? Okay, never mind, Mert. Well, come on, Molly. I guess we better go on down there now.
All right. You got enough money with you for stamps?
Oh, I don't need any. I got an account with the government. Income tax, FHA, HOLC.
Oh, dear. Come in.
Hey, Mr. McGee.
Huh?
Come over to my house right away, will you?
What's the matter now?
My brother was rehearsing his Santa Claus act, and he got a horn caught in his pants.
Why, he's too old to be playing with toys like that.
That ain't one of the toys. It's one of the reindeers. Hurry, will you?
Well, are you going, McGee?
Nah, he ain't the only guy who gets antlers in his pants around Christmas. Now, see, you take those four packages there, and I'll carry these couple. Hey, what's in this big one here?
Which one?
This one.
Oh, that.
Uh-huh.
Why, that's a new aluminum baking dish I got for Aunt Sarah.
Oh, a camisole, eh?
No, you mean casserole, dearie.
I do not. Casserole is medicine.
Go on. That's castor oil.
Well, then what's a camisole?
Well, a camisole is the... Well, it's a sort of a...
Uh-huh. You see? So it is something you cook in.
Well, it could be in hot weather.
Well, anyway, I bet that's a good...
No, we'll never get to the post office if people keep coming in like this. See who it is, dearie.
Hey, it's Gildersleeve.
Oh.
With an arm full of Christmas presents and a big smile on his face.
Oh, dear.
Must be bringing us our presents.
Oh, and I haven't got his wrapped up yet.
Play
up.
Come in, come in, come in.
Well, hello, Mr. Gildersleeve. How nice to see you.
Hi, Gildy, old man. You're looking well. A new suit?
Why, no. This is the same suit I always wear.
Well, it certainly looks nice. Have a chair, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Have a cigar, too.
Yeah, no thanks. I just dropped in.
How is dear Mrs. Gildersleeve?
Why, she's splendid, thank you. But the reason I came...
You know,
over...
I was just saying to Molly. Molly, I says, we gotta do something nice for Gildersleeve this Christmas. He's been a mighty fine neighbor, I says.
And I says, yes, McGee, I says, he's been so nice to us, I says. Though I hope he doesn't give us anything.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way about it, Mrs. McGee, because I'm not giving you anything.
That is the same old suit you got on, ain't it? Getting pretty baggy, too, if you ask me.
Was there something you wanted, Mr. Gildersleeve? We were just leaving for the post office.
Oh, yes. McGee told me this morning you were going to the post office. I just stopped in to see if you'd mail these packages for me while you were down there.
Hey, wait a minute. Why, shucks, we already got more than we
can. And I wish you'd buy me some stamps, too, while you're at it.
Say, you might save time, Mr. Gildersleeve, to get your stamps at Kramer's drugstore.
Oh, they're too expensive down there.
What do you mean, expensive? Stamps are the same everywhere.
Yeah, I know, but I hate to go into a store and buy stamps. They don't make any profit on them.
Well, what's that got to
do? I usually make a few purchases to ease my conscience.
Oh, I see.
Yes. The last time I bought a 2-cent stamp at a drugstore, I came home with a hot water bottle, toy submarine, 3 rolls of film, a rental detective story, and a couple of badminton rackets, and a big gob of hot fudge on my necktie.
A guy as fat as you are has got no business eating hot fudge.
Who's fat?
Well, besides you, there's Oliver Hardy, Don Wilson, Paul Whiteman.
Ooh. You're a hard man, McGee.
Now, let's not get into any argument, boys. We'll get your stamps for you, Mr. Gildersleeve. Yeah. What kind do you want?
Well, I want 2 sheets of 5s, 4 sheets of 1s, 1 sheet of 2s, and 3 sheets of 4s.
Spit out your gum and do it again, Gilbert.
Well, all right. I want 3 sheets of 2s, 2 of 3s, 4 of 5s, and 5 of 4s.
How about 6 of 1s and 6 of 1s of the others?
Gildersleeve, they don't make any 4-cent stamps.
Oh, yes, they do.
They do not.
They do, too.
They do not.
They do not. No!
Boy, stop fussing.
Well, if I knew as little about my own government as this big chowderhead...
Don't you call me a chowderhead, you little termite.
Gildersleeve, one of these days you're going to exonerate me too far. And I still say they don't make any 4 cent stamps.
How do you know?
Because I used to work in the post office, that's how I know.
Is that so?
Yes, that's so. I started working in the post office when I was knee-high to a mailbox.
He did.
I had charge of the branch in the Savoy Hotel. Stamping at the Savoy McGee, I was known as. Stamping at the Savoy McGee. Slick as silk and strong as Samson, that's slamming a sack of circular single-handed on a schooner sailing to the South Seas, or a streamliner scheduled to scoot to Sioux City, celebrated as a salary-saving super salesman by selling scores of 6 cent stamps to sentimental sailors, sending souvenirs to sweeties in Samoa, Siam, Ceylon, San Salvador, and similar scattered seaports, smiling and singing as I stamped and sealed stuff from city to city and state to state, a solid civil servant serving citizens and scamps. Well, let's get down to the post office and buy this lug some stamps. Important engagement we'd like to get. Who do you think you are, anyway?
Wait in line like the rest of us.
Maybe we better go to the end of the line, Molly. It's more democratic.
McGee, do you realize how many people are ahead of us in this line?
Huh?
73.
And a good thing, too. Keeps them off the streets.
McGee.
Huh?
This man standing in front of me.
Huh?
I wish he'd turn around and face the way everybody else is. He's got a blank look on his face that bothers me somehow.
Well, move aside a little. I can't see over these packages.
You see him there?
Oh, that ain't his face. Hey, bud, you got your toupee on backwards.
My goodness. Thanks, Lode.
Here comes Mrs. Uppington.
Mrs. Uppington? What's she doing in a post office? Don't she know these places are infested with common people?
I see she brought her Pekingese along to lick the stamps for.
Oh,
how do you do, Mrs. Uppington? So nice to see you.
How do you do, Mrs. McGee? And Mr. McGee?
Hi, Uppy. Hi, puppy.
Good heavens, what a lot of people. Do you have to stand in line like that? Don't you know anyone in an executive position who would take care of you?
Well, me and Jim Farley was great pals, Uppy, but Jim don't work here anymore, and I don't know the new guy.
Besides, we're no better than anyone else.
I think, my dear, as the saying goes, you have something there. mailing your Christmas packages.
Oh, no. No, we just brung them down here to see if they were wrapped up as pretty as other people.
While we're kicking the basket around, Abigail, what's the idea bringing that dime-sized Doberman in here?
Oh, you mean Fifi? Isn't she sweet? Mother's little darling.
Oh, sure.
Say hello to Mr. and Mrs. McGee, Fifi.
Wonderful, ain't it, Molly? I always wondered how you said hello in Pekingese.
Oh, hasn't she a sweet little face? Such bright eyes and such animation. You know, sometimes I could almost believe she was laughing at me.
Well, if she's really intelligent, how could she help it?
She is very intelligent, Mrs. McGee. Her mother was champion Floradora, Conquistadora Brownie the Fifth of Philadelphia.
Oh. And who was her father? Or am I putting Fifi on the spot?
I knew she was either from Philadelphia or New York, Uppy. She's got that metropolitan look.
Oh, thank you, Mr. McGee.
Don't thank him for that one. I still don't know why you should bring her into the post office, Mrs. Uppington, when everything is so busy.
Oh, well, I wanted her to mix with the crowds, Mrs. McGee, give her some real holiday atmosphere. This is Fifi's first Christmas, you know. Isn't it, Fifi?
She muffed that one up. She said hello again.
Well, if she did, she must have had a very good reason for it.
Oh.
Fifi is a very intelligent dog and very valuable, too. She's worth at least
$2,000. $2,000?
What do you mean, $2,000? Why, shucks, that's more than I'm worth.
Well, some dogs are worth more than others. Good night.
Dogs are worth more than others. Teddy Roosevelt slayed the Rough Riders with that one. Some dog.
Say, I wish we could get up to the window. This line hasn't moved 2 feet in a half hour.
Well, I'll take care of that. Watch me. Hey, up ahead there. Can't you move along any faster? Okay. I was just asking. You getting tired, Molly?
I certainly am. My feet are beginning to agitate for better working conditions.
Mine, too. I wish we could...
Hi, mister.
Oh, hello there, little girl. What you doing here?
I'm mailing a letter to Santa Claus, I bet you. Are you?
No, we're not.
Why?
Huh? What'd you say?
When?
Never mind. What'd you ask Santa Claus in your letter?
I asked him to make the man next door not mad at me anymore because I don't think he's going to give me anything for Christmas, I bet you.
Well, what juvenile peccadillo aroused his antipathy, sister?
Gail. What's the matter with you? Pardon me, Mr. Parker.
I said, what'd you do that made the man next door mad at you?
Last summer, I went in his backyard and I picked some of his permission.
Some of his what?
Permission. You know, it's a kind of a fruit that makes the picker pucker.
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, why didn't you ask him if you could pick him?
Well, I was afraid he wouldn't give his persimmon.
You mean his permission?
No, I picked his permissions.
Look, sis, you don't pick permissions. You give persimmons. Let's start over again and make it pears.
All righty. Grizzly pears or teddy pears?
So you're mailing a letter to Santa Claus, are you?
Sure. You see, here it is.
Oh, say, that's pretty good handwriting, sis.
I know it.
Don't tell me you wrote that.
No, my papa wrote it. I always ask him to write my Santa Claus letter.
Cute. That's a very good idea.
Sure it is, I bet you. All us kids do that because our papas all believe in Santa Claus.
Oh, they do, eh?
Sure. So why should we tell them any different if it makes them happy?
Hey, Molly, what makes this whole line of people give that sudden jerk every few minutes?
Why, don't you know?
No.
That seventh man up ahead has got the hiccups.
I gotta say.
Hi there, Fibber. Hello, Molly.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Hi, Harlow. Hey, take my place in this line a while, will you? I want to go sit down someplace for a while.
Me too.
Gee, I'm sorry, folks. I'd like to, but I haven't got time. I just dashed in here to mail some special orders to Racine, Wisconsin.
What do you mean by special orders? Says he with a sly twinkle in his eye.
You are Chris the shipping early. Yeah. That's pure golden bantam for my money.
Yeah, the only difference between Fibber and a corn crib is that you can hear the corn through his cracks.
See you later, Paul.
We'd have to stand in line this long 2 weeks before Christmas.
Blankets, cushions, folding chairs. Might as well be comfortable while you wait, folks. Blankets, folding chairs, cushions. Get your... Oh, hello there, kid.
Hello, Mr. Oldtimer.
Since when have you been working in the post office, Oldtimer?
No, I'm kind of a pensioner around here, kids. They give me the job in memory of my sister, Nellie.
Oh. Oh, dear. What happened to your sister, Nellie?
We never knew, daughter. She was a Pony Express rider in 1848. One day she disappeared, mail bag and all. Hollis figured she must have got caught in a landslide. Reckless critter Nellie was. But me and Ma, we never give up hope. We always thought that someday Nellie would...
What's the matter?
Hi,
Roy. How's Ma?
Fine. Where have you been?
I got caught by engine. Just got away 3 days ago. They got great news for you, Roy.
What's that?
They discovered gold in California.
You don't say.
Yep. Climb up in the saddle, Roy. Soon as I deliver this mail, I gotta go home and get a clean shirt. This buckskin's beginning to chase me. Yeah.
The King's Men sing Hilda.
They love Hilda, who plays in the band. She plays the bass drum, and I tell you, she's grand. My heart goes trick, trick, trick. It jumps so high, it beats so quick. Then she gets up with a big hot lick.
Boom, boom, ba-doom.
Bing! Every feller wants to tell her, will you be my wife? She keeps beating and repeating, never in your life. They would build a little love nest for two. Risk, raspberry, boom, boom, boom. Boom, 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 boom. Oh, may Hilda, may goodness, they love you. You have filled a big aching heart with gladness. It's your ending vein. And until the day you say a bill, the night's heart filled with sadness. Tell me fading pains. A love filled up who plays in the band. She plays the bass drum and I tell you she's grand. My heart goes trick, trick, trick. It jumps so high, it beats so quick. Then she gets up with a big hot lick. Every feller wants to tell her, will you be my wife? She keeps beating and repeating, never in your life. Hey, boy, build a little love nest for two. Risk, raspberry, boom, boom, boom. This is for two. Risk, raspberry, boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom.
A while. Your arms must be numb.
Ain't so much my arms. It's my foot. My foot is...
Uh-oh.
Hey, Bud. You in front of me there.
Si, senor.
Look, I don't like to be rude, and you'll please forgive me for introducing myself, but I'm Fibber McGee.
Very happy to meet you, senor. Permit me to introduce me. I am Pedro Gonzalez Gomez Vargas Pereira de Feria.
Hi, Pete.
No, no, no.
Now that we know each other, will you please get off my foot?
Si, senor.
Thank you very much.
Es por nada, senor. It is pleasure to do business with you. Anytime I can get off your foot, please let me know.
Yes. Don't think I won't, bud.
You sound like two gentlemen of the old school with apples for the teacher.
Oh, well.
Oh, dear. I'm so tired.
Well, me too. For 2 cents, I'd dump these.
Ah, packets. There. Good day, my dear. And a dull December to you, crab meat.
Hi, Boomer.
What are you doing in the post office, Mr. Boomer?
Always come in here to write my letters. Small, smart, and smell nice. Wonderful feeling to be able to walk away from a federal pen without hearing bloodhounds in the distance.
I hope you're writing your dear old mother a Christmas letter, Mr. Boomer.
Exactly what I am doing, my dear. Have to be careful what I say, too. The warden reads every word of her letters. Let me see now, what did I do with Mother's letter? Like to read it to you.
Never mind, Boomer. We're too tired to...
Now, let me see, where did I put Mother's letter? Had it right here a moment ago. Here's a short end of an exploded cigar. Just the butt of an old joke, you might say. Invitation to a New England boiled dinner. Ought to be interesting. Never been boiled at a New England dinner.
Never mind looking, Mr. Boomer. We're in no mood.
What's this? Pair of cellophane gloves. Very handy to let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. A couple of diamond shoulder clips I picked up as I shouldered my way out of a clip joint. And a check. Well, well, imagine that. A check. Made out to a man named Mortis Pan, M-O-R-T-I. Excuse me while I go practice a signature. Good day, my dear. Good day, you.
What a crook.
Isn't he, though? He was born with a gold chisel in his mouth.
Yeah.
How many ahead of us, dearie? I'm about ready to give up here.
Only three now, Molly. Just hang on. Oh, it's only two. Lady just got through.
Hold the packages to one side, dearie. I want to lean against you a few minutes.
All right, so, you're next, madam.
Hey, come on. We're next at the window, Molly. Thank goodness this will soon be over.
That's what I say. I'm completely exhausted.
All right, sir, you're next.
Bud, you're a sight for sore eyes. Here.
Dear.
Weigh them packages and tell me how much postage.
Sorry, sir. Can't do that here.
Huh?
Why not? We've been standing in line here for 3 hours.
But this is the money order window. You'll have to get in that long line over there.
Gentlemen, the prevention and control of tuberculosis is a year-round fight. But only at Christmas time are you asked for financial support and encouragement.
That's right. So be sure your letters and packages are decorated with Christmas seals.
Thank you, and good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox, speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
And once again, it's my turn to say a few things. We just heard Fibber McGee and Molly from December 10, 1940. That one was a little bit noisy. We apologize for that. But we have coming up for our final hour today, before we turn it all over to our winter season celebration, we have got the Screen Directors Playhouse version of The Miracle on 34th Street. That's coming up in just a moment.
I'm Joe, host of Big Band Broadway and Beyond, every Friday, wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Hi, I'm the jumper, the one who wrote that Trailways bus out of Louisiana. We want to wish each and every one of you a very special Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year's. Enjoy yourself and thank you for tuning in with WHFR 89.3. My show is called Cruising and Bluesing in the Nighttime each and every Wednesday. Up until 10, stop in, my friend. Have a blessed one. I'm the jumper, the one who wrote that Trailways bus out of Louisiana. One hot summer July is 103. No air conditioning on the bus. How did I keep cool? I had a fan from the Mount Zion Baptist Church. Every time I go home, the pastor said, you didn't have to take my church fan all the way to Detroit. My show is called Cruising and Bluesing in the Nighttime, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. every Wednesday. We do the blues that you can use.
Right now, our country feels divided, but there's a place where people are coming together.
I was nervous to talk to someone so different than me.
Me too.
Love Has No Labels and One Small Step are helping people with different political views, beliefs, and experiences connect through conversation, and it feels good.
This conversation gives me hope.
It gives me a lot of hope, too.
Take a step toward bringing our country and your community together. Start a conversation at lovehasnolabels.com/onesmallstep. A message from StoryCorps, Love Has No Labels, and the Ad Council.
This is the White Rabbit from the Hot Wax Radio, wishing you and yours a blessed Christmas and a Happy New Year, and thank you for being part of the WHFR family here at Henry Ford College.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Screen Directors Playhouse. Star, Edmund Gwenn. Production, Miracle on 34th Street. Director, George Seaton.
This is the Screen Director's Playhouse, the Thursday night feature on NBC's All-Star Festival of Comedy, Music, Mystery, and Drama. Screen Directors present a Christmas party for the 500 special girls and boys gathered here in our studio and for children of all ages everywhere. We present the delightful motion picture Christmas story, Miracle on 34th Street, starring Edmund Gwenn in his original Academy Award winning role of Kris Kringle. There is something electric about Christmas time in New York. From Thanksgiving on, the air is charged with excitement. And it's on Thanksgiving Day that Macy's Christmas Parade is forming for its joyous annual trek down Fifth Avenue. On the sidewalk, watching the bustle and commotion, stands a little old man. Resting easily on his cane, his bright eyes dart over the scene. He strokes his flowing white beard. And as he sees the parade Santa Claus in front of him, a merry smile turns his face into a mass of happy wrinkles. If you were to see him, you would think instantly of your own chimney, stockings hanging from the mantel, and that very face smiling at you from the flames of your fireplace. Suddenly, his brow darkens, and he strides importantly forward.
Hello there.
Hello yourself.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you're making a very serious mistake.
Huh?
With the reindeer, I mean. You've got plans for where Blitzen should be. And Dasher should go on my right hand side.
Oh, he should, Judy.
Oh, yes.
Look, Bud, I'm busy, see? And I...
Are you having trouble with your whip?
It's none of your darn business, but I'm all snarled up in the doggone thing.
Here, I'll help you. You see, it's all in the wrist, and... drinking.
That's cold. Man's got to do something to keep warm.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Don't you realize there are thousands of children lining the streets waiting to see you? Children who've been dreaming of this moment for weeks? You're a disgrace to the tradition of Christmas, and I refuse to have you malign me in this fashion. Who's in charge of this parade?
Oh, go away.
If you don't tell me who's in charge here, I'll tell the police officers that you're drunk.
All right. It's Mrs. Walker. There she is, across there. Oh. The one in blue.
Thank you. Mrs. Walker?
Yes. Oh, you. What do you mean, taking your costume off? Now, you get dressed and get back up on your float.
Me?
Oh, I'm very sorry. I thought you were our Santa Claus.
Your Santa Claus is intoxicated.
Oh, no. Don't tell me.
Shameful. I won't stand for having these children disappointed.
Well, I...
Why, Sue...
I wonder, could you be Santa Claus? Have you had any experience?
Hmm? Well, a little.
Would you? Please. You've got to help me out.
Madam, I am not in the habit of substituting for spurious Santa Clauses. However, these children mustn't be disappointed. No. No, I'll do it.
Oh, thank heaven. You'll never know how grateful I am. Get on your float, Santa, and thank you. Oh, Mrs. Shellhammer?
Yes?
I turn it over to you, Mrs. Shellhammer.
You've done a magnificent job on it. And your new Santa Claus looks wonderful. Why, I hadn't noticed him until just now. He's the best we've ever had. Where'd you find it?
I just turned around, and there he was.
Well, I'm glad you turned around. I'm glad he was there. Just think if Mr. Macy had seen the other one.
Just think if Mr. Gimble had seen the other one.
Oh, don't even say that. What are you going to ride in the parade?
Subway. I'm going home and getting a hot tub. And I might stay right there until next Thanksgiving.
Susan, look at the parade.
I've seen it before. The music's pretty.
Yes, it is.
Mother will be home soon, Mr. Gailey.
I hope so.
It would be nice for you to meet her.
Yes, I'd like that. But not before the parade's over.
Oh, the parade.
Say, look at that big baseball player.
He was a clown last year. They just changed the head and painted him different. My mother told me.
Wow, he's really a giant, isn't he?
Not really. There are no giants, Mr. Gailey.
Well, maybe not now, Susie. But in olden days...
Not even then.
Well, what about the giant that Jack killed?
Jack who? Well,
Jack and the Beanstalk.
I never heard of that.
You must have. You just forgot it. It's a fairy tale.
Oh, one of those. I don't know any fairy tales.
You mean your mother or father never read you any?
My mother thinks they're silly. I don't know whether my father thinks they're silly or not. I never met my father. You see, my father and mother were divorced when I was a baby.
Oh. Well, that baseball player still looks like a giant to me.
People sometimes grow very big, but that's unnormal.
Your mother tell you that, too?
Yes.
Well, hello.
I'm Fred Gailey, Mrs. Walker.
Yes, I know. Susie told me quite a bit about you.
Oh, thank you.
Hello, dear. How was the parade?
Much better than last year.
Well, thank you. I hope Mr. Macy agrees with you. I'm so glad you came in, Mr. Gailey. I wanted to thank you for being so kind, Susan. Theo told me you took them both to the zoo yesterday.
Yes, that's right. But I must confess that was part of a deep-dyed plot.
Oh.
I'm fond of Susie, very fond of her. But I also wanted to know you. I read somewhere that the surest way to meet the mother was to be kind to the child. Well, it worked.
What a horrible trick.
The parade's almost over. Mother, here comes the Santa Claus.
Oh, don't even mention the name.
He's better than last year's. At least this one doesn't wear glasses.
I see she doesn't believe in Santa Claus, either.
No, of course she doesn't. Hmm.
No Santa Claus, no fairy tales, no fantasies of any kind. Is that it?
That's right. I think we should be realistic and completely truthful with our children. Not let them grow up believing in a lot of myths and legends, like Santa Claus, for example.
I see. Yes. Well, Mrs. Walker, I'm so glad to have met you at last. I do hope you'll let me drop in again.
Mother.
Yes, dear?
I was thinking, we've got such a big Thanksgiving turkey for dinner, and there are only two of us. Couldn't we invite Mr. Gailey? Couldn't we?
Well, dear.
Oh, but please don't even think about it.
It's an awful big turkey.
Well, it's not that, dear, but I'm sure Mr. Gailey has other plans.
No, he hasn't. He said so, and he told me to ask you.
Oh, dear.
Didn't I ask all right, Mr. Gailey?
Dinner's leaves at 3 o'clock.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Our story will continue in just a moment. Screen Director's Playhouse presentation of Miracle on 34th Street, starring Edmund Gwenn as Kris Kringle. Thanksgiving Day is over. Macy's Christmas Parade was a smashing success, and the new Santa Claus something of a sensation. There seemed to be an intangible quality about the old fellow which communicated itself to the children which lined the route. Mr. Shellhammer has persuaded him to come down to the store the next morning and try his hand in the toy department. As we look into the employee's locker room, we find Chris in a magnificent Santa Claus costume just pulling on his boots.
Good morning, good morning.
Morning.
My, what a striking costume.
Hmm?
Did we provide you with that?
Oh, no. I've had it for years and years.
I see. Well, before you go up on the floor, I want to give you a few tips on how to be a good Santa Claus.
Well, go right ahead.
Well, here's a list of toys we have to push. You know, things that we're overstocked on.
Oh.
Now, you'll find that a great many children will be undecided as to what they want for Christmas. When that happens, you immediately suggest one of these items.
Eh?
Understand?
I certainly do.
Good. Now, you memorize this list, and when you finish, come up to the 7th floor. I'll be waiting for you. And don't be too long now.
Imagine making a child take something he doesn't want just because a man like that bought too many of the wrong toys. That's what I've been fighting against for years. The way they commercialize Christmas. Well, I can't think of a better place to start this year's campaign, nor a better way to start than by tearing up this list. Oh. There. I feel better already.
Santa Claus, my name is Peter.
Peter? Oh, yes. Peter's a fine name. And what do you want for Christmas, Peter?
I want a fire engine, just like the big ones, only smaller. It's got real horses, and it'll put real wet water, and I won't do it in the house, just in the backyard. My heart and hope to die.
Oh, well, Peter, I can tell you're a good boy. You'll get your fire engine.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. See, Mom, I told you he'd get me one.
Well, yes, dear. Now, you run over and look at the toys. Mommy wants to thank Santa Claus, too.
Okay.
What do you mean by saying a thing like that? You saw me shake my head at you. I was trying to tell you I couldn't find one.
Oh.
I looked all over. They're just not making that kind of fire engine.
No. You don't think I'd have said that unless I was sure, do you? Let's see what my little book says. Here we are. The Acme Toy Company at 246 West 26th Street. And they're only $8.50. A wonderful bargain.
You're recommending this company?
Oh, I keep track of the toy market pretty closely. Well, does that surprise you so?
Oh, it's not that so much, but what really bowls me over is that Macy's is sending me to another store.
Well, the only important thing is to make the children happy, isn't it? And whether Macy or somebody else sells the toy doesn't make any difference. Well, don't you feel that way?
Yes, but I never dreamed that Macy's did.
Well, as long as I'm here, they do. You'll find just what you want at FAO Schwartz, 675. Now, Bloomingdale's has exactly what the little girl wants. 249, that's all.
But for Johnny's wagon, I'd suggest you... Yes, I suggest you get it here. We have the best wagons in town. Yeah. Oh, yes, we have skates. And they're very good skates, too, but they're not quite what your little boy wants. No. Now, I'd suggest you go across the street. They have exactly what you're looking for there. At Gimbel's.
Gimbel's? Oh, you frightened me.
Well, this is Mr. Shellhammer. He's head of our toy department.
Well, I came back to congratulate you and Macy's on this new stunt you're doing.
What?
Imagine sending people to other stores. I don't get it. It's...
It certainly is.
You said it. To think that a big store like this puts the spirit of Christmas ahead of the commercial. It's wonderful. Well, I've never done much shopping here, but believe me, from now on, I'm a regular Macy customer.
Well, thank you, madam.
And thank you, too. And there'll be hundreds of other women who'll feel just the way I do, too. Now, I tell you...
I must be going mad. I've never heard of such a thing in all my life.
Well, you'll find she's right, Mr. Shellhammer. A lot of people are going to like it. An awful lot of people.
Yeah, but the point is, will Mr. Macy like it?
This seems like an awful silly thing for us to be doing, Mr. Gailey.
Well, I thought as long as we were in the store, you might as well say hello to him.
Why?
Because maybe when you talk to him, you'll feel differently about Santa Claus.
Maybe.
Hello, young lady. Would you like to come up and sit on my lap?
No, thank you.
No? What's your name?
Susan Walker. What's yours?
Mine's Chris Kringle. I'm Santa Claus.
Ha.
Oh, you don't believe that, do you?
Nope. Mm. You see, my mother is Mrs. Walker, the lady who hired you. But I must say you're the best-looking one I've ever seen.
Oh.
Your whiskers aren't loose at the sides.
Well, you pull them. Go on, let's see why.
I will.
Oof.
Hey, they don't come off.
That's because they're real. Just like I'm really Santa Claus. Now, what would you like me to bring you for Christmas?
Nothing, thank you.
Oh, now, you must want something.
Whatever I want, Mother will get for me. Oh, if it's sensible and doesn't cost too much, of course.
Susan!
Hello, Mother.
Hello, Mr. Gailey.
Hi.
Come along, Susan. I think you've taken up enough of this gentleman's time.
Goodbye, Susan. Bye.
Bye.
The explanation for all this is very simple. Your Cleo's mother sprained her ankle.
Yes, I know. Cleo called me. Been wondering where you were.
He's a nice old man, Mother. And those whiskers are real, too.
Yes, dear. Many men have long beards like that. Susan, would you mind sitting here for a minute? I'd like to talk to Mr. Gailey.
All right.
I shouldn't have brought Susie to Santa Claus, huh? Well, I'm sorry. Just that I couldn't see any great harm in Lily saying hello to the old gent.
But I think there is harm. I tell her Santa Claus is a myth. You bring her down here, she sees thousands of gullible children and meets with a very convincing old man with real whiskers. This sets up within her a harmful mental conflict. What is she to think? Whom is she going to believe?
Go on.
And by filling them full of fairy tales, they grow up considering life a fantasy instead of a reality. They keep waiting for a Prince Charming to come along, and when he does, he turns out to be...
We were talking about Susie, not you.
Whether you agree with me or not, I must ask you to respect my wishes regarding Susan. She's my responsibility, and I must bring her up as I see fit.
Okay, she's your kid.
Exactly. Now I've got to go back to my office.
You know, you've given me quite a bit to think about. Both about Susan and you. So long.
They said you wanted to see me, Mrs. Walker.
Yes, please come in.
Hello there, Susan Walker. Oh, it's good to see you again.
It's awful nice to see you.
Oh, you're awfully lucky, Mrs. Walker. That's a lovely little girl you have there.
Thank you. And Susan's the reason I asked you to come here.
Oh.
She's a little confused, and maybe you can help to straighten her out.
I'll be glad to.
Would you please tell her that you're not really Santa Claus?
Hmm?
That there actually is no such person.
Well, I'm sorry to disagree with you, Mrs. Walker, but not only is there such a person, but here I am to prove it.
No, no, you misunderstand. I want you to tell the truth. What is your name?
Kris Kringle. Susan, I'll bet you're in the first grade.
Second? I mean your real name.
Well, that is my real name. Second grade?
It's a progressive school.
Oh.
Miss Adams, please bring in the Santa Claus file. All the employment cards.
That hat of yours is very cute. Where do you get such a lovely outfit?
Macy's. We get 10% off.
Now, please don't feel that you have to keep pretending for Susan's benefit. She's an intelligent child and always wants to know the absolute truth.
Good, because I always tell the absolute truth. Now, Susan, about your school. What's the name of your teacher?
Oh, thank you, Miss Adams. Now then, is this your card?
Hmm? Let's see. Yes, yes, that's it.
Name, Kris Kringle.
Mm-hmm.
Address, Brooks Memorial Home, Great Neck, Long Island. Age, as old as my tongue and a little bit older than my teeth. Susan, dear, you go in and talk to Miss Adams for a few minutes. I'll be right with you.
All right. Goodbye.
Goodbye, young lady. Hope to see you again.
Thank you. I hope so, too.
I'm sorry, Mr.
Kringle.
I'm sorry, but we're going to have to make a change.
Change?
Yes, the Santa Claus we had 2 years ago is back in town, and I feel we owe it to him to come.
What? Have I done something wrong?
No. No. Excuse me. Mrs. Walker?
Mrs. Walker, Mr. Macy speaking. I have just been informed of the new policy you and Mr. Shellhammer initiated without consulting me or the advertising department. I do not approve of your methods, but in the face of the tremendous response on the part of the public, I can't be angry with you. I admit it sounds ridiculous to me. Imagine Macy's Santa Claus sending customers to Gimbel's. But you cannot argue with success. From now on, not only will our Santa Claus continue in this manner, but I want every salesperson in this store to do precisely the same thing. If we haven't got exactly what the customer wants, we'll send him where he can get it. We'll be known as the helpful store, the friendly store, the store with a heart. That's a wonderful Santa Claus you've got there, Mrs. Walker. Don't lose him. You will find a more practical expression of my gratitude in your Christmas envelope, Mrs. Walker. My congratulations.
That was Mr. Macy.
Talks a lot, doesn't he?
Sometimes. Mr. Macy suggested we find something else for the other Santa Clauses and keep you on.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. That's mighty good news.
You'll be here in the morning?
I certainly will. You see, this is quite an opportunity for me. For the last 50 years or so, I've been getting more and more worried about Christmas. It seems we're all so busy trying to beat the other fellow in making things go faster and look shinier that Christmas and I are getting sort of lost in the shuffle.
Oh, I don't think so. Christmas is still Christmas.
Yes, Christmas isn't just a day. No, it's a frame of mind. And that's what's been changing. That's why I'm glad I'm here. Maybe I can do something about it. And I think you and Susan are going to help me more than anybody.
We are. How?
Well, you two are sort of the whole thing in miniature. If I can win you over, then there's still hope. If not, well, I warn you, I don't give up easily. No. No. Good night, Mrs. Walker.
Good night, Mr.
Kringle. Screen Directors Playhouse presentation of Miracle on 34th Street, starring Edmund Gwenn in his original role of Kris Kringle. Business is booming at Macy's. Kris Kringle's popularity is growing by leaps and bounds. Doris Walker is still worried because she cannot dismiss the thought that Kris is slightly unbalanced. And this seems logical to her because he obviously thinks he is Santa Claus. Fred Gailey, however, feels differently and has brought the old gentleman home to dinner. Kris has dropped into Doris' apartment to call on Susan.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for inviting me to dinner.
It was a great pleasure.
Susan, I'm going to try again. I want a chance to prove to you that there is a Santa Claus. Well, now, there must be something you want for Christmas. Hmm? Something you haven't even told your mother about?
No. No, there isn't.
Oh, now, now, now. Why don't you give me a chance, eh?
All right. I want a house for Christmas.
Oh, you mean a doll's house?
No, a real house.
Huh?
And if you're really Santa Claus, you can get it for me. And if you can't, you're only a nice man with a white beard, like Mommy says.
Now, now, now. Wait a minute, Susie. Just because every child can't get his wish, now that doesn't mean there isn't a Santa Claus.
That's what I thought you'd say.
Yeah, but don't you see, some children wish for things they couldn't possibly use. Like, like real locomotives or B-29s.
But this isn't like a real locomotive or a B-29.
Well, it's awful big for a little girl like you. Now, what could you possibly do with a house?
Live in it with my mother.
Well, but you've got this lovely apartment.
I don't think it's lovely. I want a backyard with a swing and a garden and lots of things growing in it.
Well.
But I guess you can't get it, huh?
Hmm? Well, no. No, I didn't say that. It's a tall order, you know, Susie, but I'll do my best.
Okay.
Okay, Susie. Let's have some dinner now, shall we? Huh? After that, I'll go to work on your problem.
Good morning, Mr. Sawyer.
Good morning, Mrs. Walker.
I would like to ask that you give Mr. Kringle our test, if you will.
Oh, yes. He's our Santa Claus, isn't he? And his name is Kringle. How fascinating. How do you do, Mr. Kringle?
How do you do?
I must say that's a very ingenious name to have chosen. It did get you the job, didn't it?
Or vice versa.
What?
I'll leave you, too. Will you call me later, Mr. Sawyer?
Yes, of course. Now, Miss Kringle.
Yeah?
To start out with the test. Who was the first president of the United States?
George Washington.
How much is 3 times 5?
15.
How much did you say?
15. You're rather nervous, aren't you, Mr. Sawyer? Did you get enough sleep?
My personal habits are of no concern to you. Now, how many fingers do you see?
3. Oh, you bite your nails, too. Oh, that's often a sign of insecurity.
Kringle, you will pay attention to what I'm saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just trying to help.
I did not call you in here to help me, Kringle. I called you in here to find out about you, and I'm certainly finding out.
So did I answer the questions wrong?
I'm asking the questions, you old screwball.
I don't believe that Mrs. Walker intended me to have this kind of examination.
What?
No. I have great respect for psychiatry. And great contempt for muddlers who go around practicing it.
Why, you...
Are you a licensed psychiatrist?
Oh, that is none of your business.
I thought so. Mr. Sawyer, you are a phony. You ought to be horsewhipped.
How dare you? Now, you leave this office immediately.
I shall, but before I do, you listen to this. Now, either you stop analyzing, as you call it, at once, or I'm going to tell Mr. Macy what a contemptible, malicious fraud you are.
You get out of here before I throw you out.
I wouldn't try that.
Get out of here?
There's only one way to handle a man like you. You won't listen to reason. You're heartless. You have no humanity.
Are you going to leave?
Yes. There's only one way to handle your kind. My cane, if you please. Thank you.
Oh.
Good day, Mr. Sawyer.
Hello, Chris.
Hello, Fred.
Why did you do it?
Well, he deserved it.
Oh, I don't mean hitting Sawyer over the head. I couldn't agree with you more about that. But what you did here at Bellevue, I don't understand it.
Oh, that examination? Yes. I failed it.
Deliberately?
Yes.
So why?
Why? Well, because for the last few days, I've had great hopes. I had a feeling people were beginning to believe. Especially Doris. You know what happened. When I hit Sawyer, it was Doris who had me brought here to Bellevue.
Chris, let me tell you something. Doris hasn't really believed in anything for years. You can't expect her suddenly...
Well, it's not just Doris. Now, there's Mr. Sawyer. He's contemptible, selfish, deceitful, vicious. And yet he's out there and I'm in here. Now, what makes him normal? Because he conforms to a pattern. Because he thinks and acts like the great majority. So, we've got a world full of Sawyers. And if that's normal, I don't want it. No. That's why I answered the questions incorrectly.
But, Chris, you can't just think of yourself. What happens to you matters to a lot of other people. People like me. People like me who believe in what you stand for. And people like Susan who are just beginning to.
Huh?
You can't quit. You can't let them down.
No. No, I didn't think about Susan. No. You're right, Fred. Quite right. How do we get out of here?
Well, it's not going to be easy.
Well, you've got to get me out.
All right, Chris, I'll do my best.
Oh, and while you're working on it, Fred, work on something else for me, too.
Your case is going to be a full-time job all by itself.
Yes, but you're rather fond of Doris Walker, aren't you?
I'm in love with her.
Mm. How do you think she feels about you, Fred?
I think if I could just crack that shell, maybe she'd be in love with me.
Ah.
If I could just get her to break down, just once.
Mm. Why don't you take her out more?
I've tried. She's too busy with her job.
Well, that's what I wanted you to do for me, Fred. Try a little harder. You know, those two are a couple of lost souls, and it's up to us to help them. Now, I'll take care of Susie, if you'll take care of her mother.
It's good enough for me, Chris.
One more thing.
What?
Do you like living in Manhattan?
It's all right, I suppose. Of course, someday I'd like to get a house out on Long Island. Not a big place, just one of those junior partner deals around Manhasset, you know?
Yeah. Yes, I know the kind you mean.
Why?
Why what?
Well, why did you ask that?
Oh, I don't know, Fred. It just seems to me that as soon as Christmas is over every year, I get good and sick of the city, too.
Drug counter. And now back to our story. Miracle on 34th Street, starring Edmund Gwenn. Right upon us, Kris Kringle is in Bellevue, with a competent authority of psychiatrists judging him insane. At any moment, papers of commitment will be put through the New York courts, which will keep Kris committed permanently. Fred Gailey has managed to file his claim for a formal hearing.
In the matter of Kris Kringle, Your Honor, the commitment papers are before you. If Your Honor please, I should like to call the first witness.
Proceed, Mr. Mara.
Mr. Kringle, will you take the stand?
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning. Before you begin, Mr. Mara, I want to explain to the witness that this is a hearing, not a trial.
Mm.
Mr. Kringle, you do not have to answer any questions against your wishes or even testify at all.
We have no objection, Your Honor.
Oh, I'd be glad to answer any questions that I can.
What is your name?
Kris Kringle.
Where do you live?
Well, that's what this hearing will decide.
A very sound answer, Miss Kringle.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Do you believe that you are Santa Claus?
Well, of course.
The state rests, Your Honor. Well, Mr. Gailey, do you wish to cross-examine the witness? I believe he was employed to play Santa Claus. Perhaps he did not understand the question.
Oh, I understood the question perfectly, Your Honor.
No further questions at this time.
Well, in view of this statement, do you still wish to put in defense, young man?
I do, Your Honor. I'm fully aware of my client's opinions. In fact, that's the entire case against him. All those complicated tests and reports boil down to this. Mr. Kringle is not sane because he believes himself to be Santa Claus.
An entirely logical and reasonable assumption, I'm afraid.
Well, it would be if the clerk here, or Mr. Mara, or I believed that we were Santa Claus.
Anyone who thinks he's Santa Claus is not sane.
Not necessarily. For example, Your Honor, you believe yourself to be Judge Harper. And nobody questions your sanity, Your Honor, because you are Judge Harper.
I know all about myself, young man. Mr. Kringle is the subject of this hearing.
Yes, Your Honor. And if he is the person he believes himself to be, just as you are, then he is just the same.
Granted, but he isn't.
Oh, but he is, Your Honor.
Is what?
I intend to prove that Mr. Kringle is Santa Claus. Doris.
Well, hello.
I'm glad you're home.
I read the paper, Fred. You're not serious about this.
Of course I am.
But you can't possibly prove that he's Santa Claus.
Well, why not? He made Macy and Gimble shake hands, didn't he? That was impossible, but it happened.
I'd like to know what your firm thinks about this.
They are saying that I am jeopardizing the prestige and dignity of an old established law firm. And either I drop this impossible case immediately, or they will drop me.
The old buzzards. Well, I guess that's that.
Yeah, they left me no choice. So I quit.
Fred, you didn't.
Of course I did. I can't let Chris down. He needs me, and all the rest of us need him.
Look, darling, I love Chris, too. He's a kind, wonderful old man, and I admire you for wanting to help him. But you've got to be practical. You can't throw your career away because of sentiment.
I'd like to prove something to you. And I can, too. Turn on the radio.
Why?
Because I want to show you what's happened lately with sentiment. It's become darn good business. It's all over the place. Everybody's doing it. Here it comes now. Listen.
The car of the year is a good car. Please don't misunderstand. There are many good cars. They're higher priced and lower priced. If you'll bring us an idea of your requirements, we'll tell you very honestly whether we think ours is the car for you. If not, we'll recommend cheerfully the car you should have, regardless of who makes it.
Hear that? A year ago, that company would have killed themselves before okaying copy like that. And what's happening? They're doing the biggest business in their history. You can blame that on Chris.
Yes, I know.
Do you realize that a little old man that I'm defending is responsible for all those commercials? Do you know what he's done for the industry of this country? Maybe it's because public response has made it impossible for advertisers to be anything but generous, but it's his fault. He started the whole darn thing.
But you can't toss everything out the window because of a sentimental whim.
Darling, one experience doesn't make a life. You've got to have faith.
It's not a question of faith. It's just common sense, Fred.
Faith is believing in things when common sense tells you not to. And I guess these last few years you've developed too much common sense.
And yet with all my common sense, I was just beginning to think it would work out for us.
So was I. But can I help you with the tree?
Thanks, I can do it.
Well, good night.
Good night.
May I examine my witness, Your Honor?
Proceed, Mr. Gailey.
Thank you. What is your name, sir?
R.H. Macy.
Mr. Macy, if you recognize the gentleman seated over there, will you please tell us who it is?
Chris Kringle.
Your employee, is he not?
Yes.
Do you believe him to be truthful?
Yes.
You believe him to be of sound mind?
I certainly do.
Mr. Macy, you're under oath. You really believe that this man is Santa Claus?
Well, he gives every indication.
I asked you, Mr. Macy, do you believe that this man is Santa Claus?
I do.
That is all.
Your Honor, I object to this testimony. It's ridiculous, irrelevant, and immaterial. Mr. Gailey is making a circus out of this court. There's no such person as Santa Claus, and everybody knows it.
Your Honor. Your Honor, I would like to request permission for my client to answer Mr. Mara himself.
Granted.
Mr. Kringle?
Mr. Mara, I submit that what you have just said is a matter of opinion. Can you offer any proof that there is no Santa Claus?
No, I do not intend to. This is not a nursery. This is the New York State Supreme Court. I'll not waste this court's time with such childish nonsense.
Well, I don't mean to be presumptuous, but Mr. Mara seems to have appointed himself judge here, Your Honor. He's now ruling on what testimony I am introduced.
Your Honor, I demand an immediate ruling from the court. Is there or is there not a Santa Claus?
The court will take a short recess to consider the matter. Oh, hello, darling. Have you been listening to the broadcast of the trial? Yes, I'm in my chambers. Oh, I've never been in such a dilemma. Why? Well, listen, if I go back in there and rule there is no Santa Claus, we'd both better start looking for that chicken farm right now. No, I won't even get in the primaries. What? Oh, stop. Listen to reason. I'm a responsible judge. I've taken an oath. How can I seriously rule there is a Santa Claus? What will happen? Well, I'll tell you. I rule there's no Santa Claus. The kids read about it. They don't hang up their stockings. So what happens to all the toys that were supposed to be in the stockings? Nobody buys them. You think the toy manufacturers are going to like that? So they have to lay off a lot of employees, union employees. Now you've got the CIO and the AFL against you. The department stores are going to love you, too, and the Christmas card makers, the candy companies. Oh, honey, listen, as sure as you're my wife, if I do this, I can count on getting just exactly 3 votes at the next election. Our own and that district attorney Mara's out there. Oh, and I just happen to remember that Mara's a Republican. Well, recess is over, my sweet. Korea, too, maybe. I'll call you later. Before making a ruling, this court has consulted the highest authority available. The question of Santa Claus seems to be largely a matter of opinion. Many people firmly believe in him. Others do not. American justice demands a broad and unprejudiced view of such a controversial matter. This court, therefore, intends to keep an open mind. We shall hear evidence on either side.
Your Honor, the burden of proof for this ridiculous contention clearly rests with my opponent. Can he produce any evidence to support his views?
If the court please, may my client take over for me?
Yes, of course.
Well, will Thomas Mara please take the stand?
Oh, me?
No, Mr. Mara. Thomas Mara, Jr. Yes. Now, Tommy, now. You know the difference between telling the truth and telling a lie, don't you?
Gosh, everybody knows you shouldn't tell a lie, especially in court.
Tell me, do you believe in Santa Claus, Tommy?
Sure I do. He gave me a brand new sled last year, and this year I wrote him that I wanted a...
And what does he look like?
You.
I object.
Overruled.
Tell me, Tommy. Why are you so sure there is a Santa Claus?
Because my daddy told me so. Didn't you, Dad?
Yes, and you believe your daddy, don't you, Tommy? Huh? He's a very honest man.
Of course he is. My daddy wouldn't tell me anything that wasn't so. Would you, Daddy?
Thank you, Tommy. Thank you, that's all.
Your Honor, State of New York concedes the existence of Santa Claus. But in so conceding, we ask of Mr. Gailey and his client to cease presenting personal opinion as evidence. Now, the state could bring in hundreds of witnesses with opposite opinions, but it's our desire to shorten the hearing rather than prolong it. I therefore demand that Mr. Gailey now submit authoritative proof that Mr. Kringle is the one and the only Santa Claus.
Your point is well taken, Mr. Mara. I'm afraid I must agree. Mr. Gailey, are you prepared to show that Mr. Kringle is Santa Claus on the basis of competent authority?
Not at this time, Your Honor. I ask for an adjournment until tomorrow. Morning, Chris.
Morning, Fred.
I'm afraid it's bad news, Chris. I've tried every way to get some competent authority. I wired the governor, the mayor.
Never mind, Fred. Now, this letter means more to me than all the governors and mayors in the world.
Who's it from?
Well, you read it.
No time now. They're ready to start.
Well, let me read just a bit of it.
All right, go ahead.
Well, listen, Fred. And I want you to know, Mr. Kringle, that I believe all you told me and everything will turn out fine. I hope you are not sad. Yours truly, Susan. Oh, P.S. Dear Mr. Kringle, I believe in you, too. Doris.
So our two lost souls have found themselves, huh, Chris? A little late for you, though.
Oh, I don't matter, Fred. They finally found faith. That's really important. Hey, take a look at the envelope.
Why?
Well, see how it's addressed.
Yeah, let me look at that.
Yeah.
Chris Kringle, New York County Courthouse, mm-hmm. Center and Pearl Streets, New York City.
Yes, and I have two other letters from children here, Fred. They're just addressed Santa Claus. But I got them.
Are you ready, Mr. Mara?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Gailey?
My client will speak for himself, Your Honor. I'm going to make a quick phone call, Chris.
Go ahead, son. I've got an interesting book here.
Your Honor, the defense has yet to bring in one concrete piece of evidence to substantiate this preposterous claim. Not one competent authoritative proof that this man is Santa Claus. On view of these facts, and especially since today is Christmas Eve, we're all anxious to get to our homes, I ask that you sign the commitment papers without further delay.
Mr. Kringle, haven't you anything to offer?
Yes, I have, Your Honor. I should like to submit some facts in evidence. They concern the Post Office Department, an official agency of the United States government. The Post Office Department is one of the largest business concerns in the world.
Your Honor, I'm sure we're all gratified to know that the Post Office Department is doing so nicely, but it hardly has any bearing on the case.
It may have a great deal, Your Honor. May I proceed?
Oh, yes, by all means.
Well, now, according to this book of regulations in my hand, the United States postal laws make it a criminal offense to willfully misdirect mail or intentionally deliver it to the wrong party. Consequently, the department uses every possible precaution.
Your Honor, the state of New York is second to none in its admiration of the Post Office Department. We're happy to concede all of Mr. Kringle's claims.
For the record?
Yes, for the record. Anything to get on with this case.
Then may I introduce these two letters as evidence, Your Honor? They are simply addressed to Santa Claus. No other address whatsoever. Yet they were delivered to me by bona fide employees of the Post Office. Now, could this be considered positive proof?
Two letters, Your Honor, are hardly positive proof. I understand the Post Office receives thousands of such letters every year.
That is true, Mr. Mara. If I may interrupt, Your Honor, I should like to say that I have other exhibits, but I hesitate to produce them.
We'd all like to see them, I'm sure.
Can I get some more mail, Fred?
Just watch.
Oh.
I apologize, Your Honor, for the staggering amount of evidence necessary, but you will notice being wheeled down the aisle 9 truckloads of mail. Oh, every letter on these trucks is addressed to Santa Claus. The Post Office Department has delivered them. The Post Office is a branch of the federal government. Therefore, the United States government recognizes this man, Chris Kringle, as the one and only Santa Claus.
The
United States of America believes this man to be Santa Claus, this court will not dispute it. Case dismissed.
I got your note, Doris, in court. Made me very happy.
I'm glad, Chris. It's making our Christmas very happy to have you with us.
I didn't get my present.
Oh, but darling, you have loads of presents.
Not the one I wanted. Not the one Mr. Kringle was going to get for me.
Well, I tried my best, Susie, but...
You couldn't get it because you're not Santa Claus, that's why.
Hmm?
Just a nice old man with whiskers, like Mother said, and I shouldn't have believed you.
I was wrong when I told you that, darling. You must believe in Mr. Kringle and keep right on doing it. You must have faith in him.
But, Mommy, he didn't get me the... Oh, it doesn't make sense.
Faith, darling, is believing in things when common sense tells you not to. I mean, just because things don't turn out the way you want them to the first time, you've still got to believe in people. I found that out.
You mean it's like that, if at first you don't succeed, try again?
Yes.
I thought so.
Come in.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Anybody notice they didn't get any presents from me?
I did.
Yes, I'll bet you did. And I'll bet your mother did, too, only she's too polite to mention it. Well, I've got two presents. One, Doris, is a little special. And it's just for you.
Oh.
Very tiny. It's in a very tiny plush box. Very round. And filled with a lot of love.
You want me to leave?
Stay right where you are, Chris.
All right. All right. I like it here.
I've got another present.
Where is it?
It's in my pocket on a piece of paper. It's called an option.
Well, what's an option?
Something that means that nobody else can buy this present unless I don't want it.
Do you want it?
I want it if you and Mommy want it as much as I do. Look, Susan, here's a picture of it. It's a house.
Oh.
It's my house, Mommy. It's my house. The very house I asked Mr. Kringle for.
You asked Mr. Kringle for this house?
Susie. Isn't it wonderful to believe again?
Oh, I do, Mr. Kringle. I do.
So do I, Chris.
And that's the happiest Christmas that you could possibly give me.
I believe too, Chris. You know that. Tell me something.
Oh, anything, Fred.
Who are you?
Me? I'm Chris Kringle. Bye.
Next week, another great star recreates the memorable role on Screen Director's Playhouse as we present our adaptation of one of Hollywood's most unusual films. Our story will be Alias Nick Beale, directed by John Farrell. And our stars will be Ray Milland and Nancy Olson. Now, here again is tonight's star, Edmund Gwenn.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Our play, you know, isn't really over. It's true the pages of our script have been acted out, but that's scarcely the end of Chris Kringle, is it? No. Anyway, not for the 500 girls and boys in our studio audience tonight. No, and not for you either, I expect. That's because the old duffer is completely timeless. And although this particular Kris Kringle doesn't seem to have any end, he did have a beginning. Yes, he began on the screen as one of Hollywood's most brilliant writer-directors. I'd like to introduce him to you now. The creator of Miracle on 34th Street and of such other films as Apartment for Peggy, The Big Lift, George Seton.
Thanks, Eddie. You know, we seem to be on the birth of a kind of a young tradition here.
Well, it was just a year ago, George, that we did the same show, wasn't it? with the same wonderful audience of boys and girls.
Another screen director's Christmas party, and Kris Kringle hasn't changed a bit.
Well, that's one of the nicest things about playing Santa Claus. The part goes on and on, year after year. And, of course, we actors are very fond of those kind of roles.
And directors are very fond of your kind of acting. Teddy, your performance in Miracle made a dream come true.
Oh?
Because when Valentine Davies and I started to write the screenplay, well, it's all we had to go on, a dream, an idea, just a hope that we could capture on celluloid that thing called Christmas spirit. And, Teddy, you're it.
My dear George, the way I fill a Santa Claus suit to bursting, I don't quite fancy myself as a spirit.
You're Santa Claus to the fingertips. And you've got an assignment.
What, to give a performance?
To give out the gifts that NBC is giving to these 500 youngsters.
Oh, I'll accept that assignment, yes. You'll help, Mr. Director.
I'll help, Mr. Actor.
Good, then since I'm still Kris Kringle, I'm really the most appropriate one to wish the audience a Merry Christmas from all of us on the Screen Director's Playhouse. May it bring you the most precious gift of all, happiness. Good night.
And so ends Screen Director's Playhouse, the Thursday night feature on NBC's All-Star Festival. Miracle on 34th Street was presented through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox. Watch for Richard Widmark in the 20th Century Fox Technicolor production, Halls of Montezuma. Edmund Gwenn may currently be seen in the 20th Century Fox productions, Mr. 880, and For Heaven's Sake, with George Seaton as director. Included in tonight's cast were Lorene Tuttle as Doris, David Ellis as Fred, Gail Bonney, Joan Ray, Bill Conrad, Ralph Moody, Herb Rawlinson, Joel Nestler, and Jack Moyle. Miracle on 34th Street was adapted for radio by Nat Wolfe. The Screen Director's Playhouse is produced by Howard Wiley and directed by Bill Karn. This is Jimmy Wallington speaking and inviting you to listen again next Thursday when we present Ray Milland and Nancy Olson in Alias Nick Beale with Screen Director John Farrell. Listen again next week to Screen Director's Playhouse, the Thursday night feature on NBC's All-Star Festival of Comedy, Music, Mystery, and Drama. Listen tomorrow evening to the one and only Duffy's Tavern, the Friday night feature of the All-Star Festival.
Join Archie and the gang at Duffy's Tavern tomorrow night on NBC.
And that's just time for me to say goodbye for 2024. And we're going to listen to a little bit of the Christmas Sing with Bing from 1961. And then at 1 o'clock, we will bring you, you guessed it, WHFR's exclusive winter season celebration. That's at 1 o'clock, so stand by. In the meantime, let's go back to 1961. This has been Radio Vault.
This is a Radio Vault special feature from WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
Merry Christmas, everybody. It's Christmas Eve. And time again for the Christmas Sing with Bing. Yes, Ken, and as always, affectionately dedicated by INA to the happiness and security of families everywhere, including our good friends in Canada. Christmas Sing with Bing is heard across the country, Alaska, and Hawaii over the CBS radio network and throughout the world over the Voice of America and the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Happy holidays, happy holidays. While the merry bells keep ringing, may your every wish come true.
Oh, yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, it's the big night again. Isn't it magnificent?
Oh, Bing, Christmas is for children.
Well, we are children for the night, aren't we, Ken?
That's what I mean.
I know that's what you meant.
And Bing, may I say you don't look a year older than you did last Christmas Eve?
Oh, I'd be very grateful if you would. Oh, I'll tell you something, Ken. Christmas time's a great rejuvenator, isn't it?
Yes, sir, and I'm for it.
Oh, everybody's for Christmas, and Christmas is for everybody. In fact, Christmas is for all. It's for children, grown-ups, dogs, cats. Even our parakeets.
I know, our bird cage is really decorated this year.
Why not?
All of God's children are basking in the benefits of the season.
As it should be, too. And Ken, do you realize this makes our seventh Christmas sing, our seventh Christmas get-together for INA?
7 years? Mm-hmm. Golly, it doesn't seem that long.
Oh, yes, Ken, but look back, think back. You'll see it makes seven.
Well, that's right, Bing.
So tonight, I think we should get in a mellow mood. Sort of, you know, sentimental, don't you think, Ken?
Oh, definitely. After all, we've been singing together here with people from around the world for all these years, and we have some wonderful friends and neighbors dropping in to sing with us again tonight.
I'm glad you mentioned singing, Kenneth, because that's what we're here for. So stand back and let's launch the first carol before we lose our enthusiasm. Joy to the world. All you carolers out there now, joy to the world. And if you don't mind, I'll take the solo part. I like to grab one, you know, while I'm still fresh. Okay?
It's okay by me.
Okay, then join me, whoever and wherever you are, on this Christmas Eve. And that includes Paul Weston and the Norman Luboff Choir. Everybody sing out now.
Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her King. Let every heart prepare him room, and heaven and nature sing, and heaven and nature sing, and heaven and heaven and nature sing.
All right, everybody now in the family key, please.
Joy to the world, the Savior reigns, and there is all in glory. What fields and floods, what hills and plains, prepare him room, and heaven and nature sing, and heaven and nature sing, and heaven and nature sing.
Ah, that was a rouser, Bing. A fitting opening for this wonderful night.
Yes, it's a night of friendship and warmth and good fellowship, and a deeply devout night, too, of course.
Well, tonight then, Bing, I think we ought to get real nostalgic, maybe even maudlin.
No, I think we might, yeah. I'm for the sentimental touch, you know, every time. Then let's say this is the night for sentiment and singing. And now to present our friends and neighbors who joined with us tonight. First caroler on hand, because she arrived with her husband, is Mrs. Paul Weston. Known to you devotees of the show world is Joe Stafford.
Merry Christmas, Bing. Ken, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, Joe.
Merry Christmas, Joe.
And a special word to Rosemary Clooney. Rosie girl, I'm sorry you're bedded down with that flu bug and can't be here tonight. But I hope you're listening, because we all want to say get well and Merry Christmas.
That's sure right, Rosie. Take care of yourself now. We all miss you. And next to arrive...
I am Edgar Bergen, also a caroler.
Well, then, enter Edgar Bergen.
I am a caroler, frosty, spangled, and chilled, anxious to join in the celebration.
Well, warm yourself at the fire, Edgar. And who's the little fellow with you there? Is he a caroler, too?
You darn tootin', I'm a caroler. I'm a tenor.
Oh, Charlie, I think you're a soprano.
I still think I'm a tenor. But Merry Christmas, Bergen. I'm not going to start a fight with you tonight, you know. It's tough enough to get a present out of you when we're chums.
No, no beefs tonight, huh, Charlie?
No, sir, Mr. Crosby. You know, Bergen has been known to start a little trouble on Christmas Eve so he could sort of hold back in the gift department.
No, Charlie, you know that Santa left you something last year.
Yes, he did. What he left me, he could have blown through the keyhole. A swallow could have dropped it off on his way to Capistrano.
Oh, Charlie.
You see, Mr. Crosby, you see how he's trying to pick a fight?
Here comes another strolling player, and I think her name, I think it's Catherine Crosby, isn't it?
Right you are, sire. I am a caroler, eager and merry and anxious to join this happy hijinks of hilarity.
Well, move in, caroler Catherine.
Say, she's cute.
Charlie, that's Bing's wife.
Well, that doesn't prevent her from being cute, does it? Now, listen, Bergen, I warned you not to start a fight, or you're not going to get your present.
Well, I thought you were worried about not getting a present from me.
Well, I am. I'm worried about everything tonight. Tension is running very high.
Simmer, simmer, simmer down, if you will, now, Charlie. It's time for a song from one of our top carolers, Miss Jo Stafford. Joe, take the solo part now. It's your turn.
Thanks, Bing. And the song is Winter Wonderland.
In the lane, snow is glistening.
This is Missy J. I wish you peace, peace of mind, body, and soul this holiday season and in 2025. I hope that all of your needs are met. Thank you for always listening to the station that makes waves, WHFR 89.3.FM on your dial. Peace.
Welcome to the WHFR season celebration. We've prepared special holiday shows just for you. This is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists from the campus of Henry Ford College.
This is WHFR .FM 89.3, and this is a pre-recorded holiday show. I'm Terrence Tyson of the Play It By Ear Show, and
I'm Anderson Coleman, sitting in with the Jazz Master, and we're going to entertain you for the Christmas holiday, and we're going to lay them out for you.
All right. We're going to get things started off with Ali Ryerson, and this is What Child Is This?